Welcome to the second episode of the Adeptus Terra podcast. I actually can't believe we made it to number two.
Yeah, I know.
That's awesome. After the massive trial that it took to get number one on the air, which we will come back to a lot later. But this episode is called Those Who Can't Do, Serve It All. I'm Sam.
And I'm Matt.
And let's just jump straight into the show, really.
Awesome.
Right, so if we go straight into our first section, which is news from Terra. The news from Terra is basically where we will just talk about our month and what we've done. So you look at purchases, painting, building, hobbying, playing games, anything really, and also kind of like a commitment for next month as well, which I think would be really good for Matt, as as Matt has actually purchased quite a lot this month.
And failed on last month's kind of things I said I'd do.
So you said last month that you would read a Black Library book.
Yeah, failed at that one.
You failed at that one. And you were, what else was you doing? You were going to build some drop pods.
Yeah, two drop pods, which are still in cellophane.
Right. Okay. So what actually have you done this month then?
I've done quite a lot in the sense of purchasing. Sam's kind of alluded to that already. I had my birthday a week ago. I'm now 24 again.
This is the seventh time that Matt has turned 24.
Yeah, do the maths. That's probably not right. But anyway,
You're 31.
No, I'm not.
You just
31.
Said do the maths.
No. Anyway, yes, I had my birthday and I asked for lots of money because I didn't really know what I wanted and I knew that I could get some 40k stuff, some goodness.
Good plastic crack.
Yeah, so I thought, why not? I've actually purchased quite a lot again. It's going to seem like a crazy buyer. A lot of it's come from eBay and not been crazy dear, which is awesome. I got 8 chainswords for my Space Wolves, my last squad of Blood Claws. Like my 6,000 plus points Space Wolves are very nearly done now. I need 10 Assault Marines and that's it.
Are they the normal GW ones or are they the Skyborg or?
Yeah, they're just GW. Got a pack of 8 off eBay for like £2.
Right.
And just stuck them on all the guys that needed chainswords.
like the Blood Angels, the Space Wolves, all of the chainswords, the shoulder pads are all pretty unique. So it's not just like you're painting a weird little U thing on a shoulder pad. So correct me if I'm wrong, but don't the chainswords have wolf tails hanging off of them?
Yeah, wolf tails, skulls, tribally patterns that they use for squad markings.
So even if it's better than just like obviously a normal chainsword.
Yeah.
So you can get away with just buying the normal standard GW.
Yeah, completely. The GW kits are amazing. I think they're so good. And eBay's amazing for getting bits, so that's what I did. That was cool. I also got 5 scout snipers all his sniper rifles. The sergeant has a power sword. It goes with the fluff, really, more than anything else. It probably won't point it in like competitive games.
No, I suppose it just counted as a class.
Sorry,
combat.
You guys didn't see the air quotes I did because this is radio and not TV.
We should definitely look at doing a video podcast.
Oh, no, no. Chris, it's hard enough getting this on.
Well, it means you'd actually have to wear clothes.
Don't tell them that.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Get that image out of your head. You don't want that, especially those who know us. They will testify for that. So I got that. What else did I get? I made 2 purchases from Forge World this month. Right at the beginning of the month, I bought the Imperial Armour Amphilian Project for my NIDS. Always wanted an Imperial Armour book, thought, why not? Good chance that I would need it, because I'm going to use a Dimecarion in my NID list, so that was really cool. I also purchased Sam's birthday present, because his birthday
That was on my purchases. I was going to talk about
I purchased it.
But
so it's
you
on
gave
my
it
list.
To me.
Yeah. Well, I didn't put on my list what you gave to me for my birthday.
It's a really good... it's a really good kit, as in, I've looked at the standard shoulder pads that come with it, and I'm just never going to be able to paint enough details.
You didn't actually say what it was.
Oh, I apologise.
You jumped into it.
Oh, man, I'm so sorry. Right, it was an Imperial Knight kit, the House Terran kit. And so it's got an eagle on one side.
Yeah, stallion horses, I think.
Yeah, yeah, kind of. So...
very regal.
Much better than I'm ever going to be able to paint, and that's going to go with my 2,000-point guard. Tank regiment, so I think it'd be quite cool to see how it goes.
Yeah, so I got that with my Imperial Armour book, and they came like within a couple of days, and awesome book, amazing. Imperial Armour books are awesome. If you've got one, you'll know, and if you haven't, I seriously recommend, if you've got the money, to get one that's based around your army. I'm loving the NID one, gonna maybe try and play a few of the missions out, and I want to use some of the models in it as well, so that's cool. I bought, talking about Tyranids, a Trigon and a Lictor from eBay, both for £20. So both together for £20, which is pretty crazy because a Trigon's like must be like £40 now.
Yeah.
And a Lictor's 15 quid. So it was really nice to get both of them for.
See, I never see these kind of deals. Whenever I look on eBay, it's like full price or probably adding a couple of quid on.
Yeah.
But then whenever you go on eBay, it's just like, oh, I've bought this entire 4,000 point army for a fiver. And it's just
yeah,
not fair.
I do surf eBay quite religiously every, I don't know, evening when I'm in bed. Just it's like a habit now, it's just the way of life. So yeah, I've got that. I picked up the Assassin's Codex. I've been listening to all the other podcasts and they've all kind of covered Assassins recently.
Yeah.
Well, especially Overlords and Master of the Forge have had like a whole episode on the Assassins, and I just wanted one basically. Thought they're a really cool part of the fluff. The fact that they're acting under their own orders and, you know, don't necessarily have to fit with the fluff of your army.
Yeah, so the example I think was given was it was Johnny that with the Johnny from the Overlords where he put his Vindicare with his Gene Stealers and NIDs, and it basically was the Vindicare was causing this NID attack and orchestrating behind it to the greater good of the Imperium from the Order. So that was kind of it. Sort of opens up the ability to have them in narrative gaming, which is quite cool. Yeah. And plus, I have one, so.
Well, I mean, I've gone through the Codex and I like the fluff and I learned a lot listening to the podcast. And I'm going to go for an Eversaur Assassin. He's kind of getting punchy, really scary in combat. And I think with my wolves, he kind of fits. Like, the wolves are quite distrusting towards the Inquisition and anything kind of around that. So they won't like Assassins, but then when they walk around the corner and see an Eversaur ripping 10 guardsmen apart that have fallen to chaos, they'll be like, oh, good job. So I thought that was really cool. And then I'm going to use the rest of the points I've got left over to do a small ally contingent, just a bit of a palate cleanser for my Space Wolves.
Right, who are you allying in?
Yeah, I don't know yet. I'm still working on it, so I'm not going to mention
guard.
It yet. Guard are one of the options. But yeah.
Think about it, you can have a complete snow-based guard army. Like, you can use the...
It won't be a big force.
No, but you can have, like, a PDF. Like, you can have the ones with the Russian, basically the Russian...
The Voistrans.
Yeah, the Voistrans. They would be awesome. Like, think where you could put little snow bits on there, on the tanks.
All right,
and
all right. Yeah.
This is how you get Matt to do stuff.
Just give me ideas.
Tantalizing.
Yeah, no. Anyway, I'm still writing lists, and you'll hear about that in the future, I'm sure. I actually got a gift card for Games Workshop from one of my friends, from Chip. I spent that on a Dark Elf Assassin. From fantasy to
a
convert.
Dark Elf Assassin.
Yeah, to convert into an Eversaur.
Oh, okay, yeah, I see what you mean. Which one? Do you know?
He's got like a cloak on, he's got like a death mask on, so it still looks quite similar to the Eversaur. He's got two hand weapons, so he's got a blade in one hand and a kind of like three prong knuckle duster dagger thing.
Is that the one that I had for Warhammer Crest?
Maybe, actually.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
And
no, that was gone, long gone, but...
yeah.
Oh, cool. That's a really good kit. It paints up really well.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking of maybe doing a bit of... like cutting off some of the spikes on the, what are they called, van braces he has around his wrists and mounting, you know, the wrist bolters that you get from a Sanguini guard?
Yes.
Mounting one of those on there.
Okay. Because
he's supposed to have a pistol.
I have many of those, so you can just...
Stuff like that and just 40kify fantasy
models. I think the fantasy models are kind of good for that kind of stuff because the assassins are humans.
Yeah.
So obviously we know they come from the, out of the... basically the orphanage of officers' children's, and they come out of there. So they are human, so they're not going to be as big as Space Marines. So you can kind of get away with, but you can let your imagination run free.
Yeah, I like this guy because he's got the death mask on, so you can't see his face.
Mm-hmm.
So although it's a dark elf, there's no pointy ears anywhere. He looks human. I'm looking forward to converting that when it comes. I also picked up Nurgle's Rot, which is one of the new paints, or the newest paints that GW brought out.
Right.
Which we'll get into later. Sneak preview there for you. And then that gets on to the big bad last purchase. I asked from all my family money because, like I said, I just wasn't sure what I wanted.
The plastic crack fix.
Well, I just decided that, do you know what? I need a couple of big kits and a couple of big things that, well, I say I need, I want. And this is the only way that I can really afford it. So luckily I got enough money and I was able to actually buy my Dimekaren.
Ah, the big NID.
Yeah. So Imperial Knight is size NID coming my friends' ways. So that'll be really fun. And I get to use the rules in the Amphidian project, which I've already mentioned. So yeah, I'm really happy.
So you ordered it on we're recording on a Thursday. So you recorded it, you bought it on Tuesday?
Wednesday morning, yes.
Wednesday morning, right, okay. And you also paid...
I express delivered it, yeah.
Because you needed that crack, just a little bit quicker.
Yeah, I need it. Yeah, I worked out that I still had enough, a little bit extra left of my birthday money.
Not enough to buy another model, so
it
makes
sense. Yeah,
so I thought,
why not pay for it to come quicker?
Yeah,
so that was basically it, really. And so that's all my purchases.
Is it with us now?
No.
No,
it's not here yet. I think it's been dispatched now, though.
It's been dispatched.
Yeah.
Because they offer the online... When you do the express, they offer the online tracking, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe tomorrow.
Yeah, possibly.
Maybe you can bring
it
down to the club,
the club on Saturday.
On Saturday. Get it built and then you can start playing.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's got to be based to count, so...
Yeah.
You have to wash it and paint it.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
So that's your purchase. Yeah. What have you painted this month?
Oh, God. This is where it starts. Yeah, that was quite a lot of stuff. And hopefully, you've been able to follow. We've already mentioned I failed to build the two drop pods. I didn't fail building the lictor that I bought.
Right, no, you built that at the club, didn't you?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it was an old metal one, unbuilt, so it was a bit of a nuisance. I had to kind of glue it and leave that bit for like 3 hours and then come back to it. And
the classic metal conundrum.
Yeah, but it looks awesome, and I used Loctite super glue, so...
Once it's stuck, it's stuck.
Yeah, it should be pretty solid, so I'm pretty happy with that. It's quite a cool pose as well. And other than that, building-wise, I built the 7 blood claws I mentioned when I got the chainswords. I thought, right, I need to build these guys, so I built them. Other than that, painting. I started painting a Broodlord, a Morlock for my nids. Just base-coated them and got the first layer of skin on.
Mm.
And I completed my Orc Warboss conversion.
Ah, yes.
That was this month. Feels like forever ago I finished him. I don't know, you know when you get the vibe for painting? And you're going to do this in a day. And I just spent most of the day on him and get him done, and he looks pretty awesome. I want to go back, maybe do a bit more detail on him, but he's painted his face.
So you converted him, so he's actually got no legs. He's got robot legs.
Yeah, he's got killer can legs.
Killer can legs. Do you want to describe him? Because I can't remember.
I might have done in the first episode, but if not, I'll do it again anyway. He's basically an Orc Warboss should be the size of a Dreadnought, roughly. In the fluff, that's what he is.
Right.
And... yeah, I just wanted one roughly around that. So I took a Demon Prince body, kind of carved out the back a little bit, put some engine blocks on it so that he'd look kind of, you know, cyborg bodies.
Cool, cool, cool.
And wires coming out of him and stuff like that. And then I used a Cromlech head. They make like Warboss size heads, like quite big heads.
Cool.
So I used one of those and he's kind of screaming. He's got like exhaust pipes coming out the top of his head. Where ears should be and stuff like
that. Because, of course, that's the logical place to put an exhaust pipe when you're making an orc.
So that's really cool. And then I just took a killer can kit. I built the two killer cans, and then I'm looking to sell them, probably on eBay.
Right, okay.
And then I used the third killer can for the parts to make the legs and the arms. He's on a Dreadnought size base.
Okay, cool. So
60 mil.
Right.
So
does he measure up against Dreadnought? Is he the same size?
He's a little bit shorter, which is what I wanted, really. I didn't want him to be absolutely crazy big, he's big.
Okay.
He's big.
He can still hide behind a wall.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good.
But yeah, I was really chuffed with the conversion. Probably one of the best I've done. Obviously, a lot of green stuff used as well. So I've kind of learnt some new techniques with that and stuff. And yeah, and then I thought, right, I'm going to paint him.
Have you given him a name yet?
Yes, he's Dregsnack.
Dregsnack. Dregsnack.
Yeah. I haven't got like a last name for him yet because I want to see what he does. Most war bosses are like so-and-so, the head crumper or the tank destroyer or whatever. But yeah, that's been my painting and building, really. Not a lot. I'm enjoying hobbying. I'm kind of steady pacing.
Right.
Next month, I'm going to get those two drop pods done.
Yeah.
I failed this month. So I want to get them done.
I think if you don't get them done, then you should give me your Dimecarion. I think that's fair. Personally, I think that's fair. I can see no unfairness part of it.
Deal.
Right, so if you fail to get the drop pods painted...
No. Built.
Whoa!
That's the stage they're in.
Right, okay, so they've got to be built.
They've got to be fully built.
Right, and then
you cannot steal them from my house.
No, no stealing, no foul play, but if you don't do them, by the time you next record...
You can have my Dimecarion model.
He is going to become a Blood Angel servitor. God. He's just going to be a giant servitor bug. He's going to have a Bile Pred mounted on top of him, and he's just going to be carrying around a Bile Pred.
Oh, nice.
Is a big kit.
Yeah, it's not happening though. I'm going to build two.
Right, cool. No, it's fine. Obviously,
that's just giving me the incentive.
No, it's fine. That's all right.
Anyway, what did you buy, build, paint?
Right. So I didn't really buy a lot, or build a lot, or paint a lot. So I bought a Wyvern tank because that's for my next tank for my 2K.
Oh yeah.
So in the list I have two of them. So I've already got one that my sister bought me. Sister bought me for my birthday. And I thought, well, next month I might as well build those, and went and bought the kit. So I went down to Wayland. While I was there, I accidentally bought two paintbrushes, two cans of spray paint that I gave to Matt. And some glue. So I only went in there for a tank and came out with a lot more.
Quite a lot. No, those two can of paint, spray cans, that's better.
There you go.
Are Incubi Darkness, the Dark Elder colours.
Yeah.
Reason for that is that's the base coat that I use for my Tyranids, for the armour. So this will save me having to spray them black and then paint that armour colour on. I can now base coat them in that dark green.
It's I suppose it's quite a selfish present, because it means that he'll have the models painted quicker.
Yeah.
And obviously, I prefer playing painted models.
Yeah, benefits you as well. But I'm really grateful for him, man. That's awesome. I look forward to spraying a lot of nids and getting them at least undercoated.
Mm. So other than that, I haven't really bought anything else. It's been a really dry month. Like, I'm trying to save money. Next month, though, I've got my my big kit build buy for Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh, you have to listen to the next episode.
Give him something.
Yep. So you'll find out next time. Painting wise, I finished off my Punisher tank.
Yeah.
I don't think we recorded last time that was being painted.
I think we might have mentioned the painting challenge.
Right, that's cool. Anyways, it was being painted, and that's all now finished. I haven't done battle damage on it yet, so I like the GW technique that they do on their YouTube page of basically using a cut-up piece of foam and really kind of like stippling on like scuffs and stuff. So that's quite cool, but I sort of wanted to resist doing that just at the moment until I sort of play them.
Yeah.
And then I can kind of add bits on until they're all really all built, so I can do it all together.
Yeah. That makes sense, to be honest. Then they'll all look similar.
Yeah, so that's quite cool.
Same amount of damage.
I went and actually bought, because I remember at the last point recording that I didn't have my Krieg captain guy in the tank because he never turned up. I ended up found another one on eBay, bought him.
Yeah.
He turned up like 2 days left before the end of the end of the month for the challenge.
Yeah.
So he was quickly painted, and so he was done. Because the new month happened, I started painting the Hellhound.
Yeah, I got from that Italy. As well. I didn't put anything in.
You didn't put anything up. I know, I did notice that when I went through and checked everyone off to who's done it.
Yeah, it's really cool seeing other people's come in. We mentioned this last episode, but obviously some of you might not have even heard that. We do a painting challenge at our club. We've started it. Me and Sam kind of got together and said, right, we should do a kind of prize giving.
I'm sick of playing grey models, is I think my exact words.
Fair enough. So we've put up a prize of a single KR case full of foam. And basically the challenge is you've got to paint one unit per month if you're a member of the club. And you post a photo in the first week of it in its first stages, and then a photo by the end of the month, which is tomorrow.
Yes.
Everyone that's listening. Wow.
You should have submitted it already, and you should be starting on your next one.
And if you haven't, feel bad.
Yes, feel really bad.
Yeah, you upload it on the last week, and then there you get a raffle ticket. And at the end of the year, depending on how many months you've succeeded, is how many raffle tickets you've got.
Well, a lot of us don't go to tournaments, so we don't have that requirement needed to paint.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like an incentive. And it's kind of, it's looking at the other part of the hobby apart from just playing.
Yeah, completely.
Which is cool. So I also, I've been painting my Hellhound and I got it from Italy.
Yeah.
And I managed to find on the back of the Hellhound.
Who found?
Okay, Matt pointed out for me that there on the back of the Hellhound, there is a small little panel, which obviously looks like an access panel, which was perfect size for an Italian flag.
Yeah.
So that was, I painted that up, painted up all the rest of the model, and it came out really well.
I saw it this morning.
That
actually
sounds really pompous, me just saying it came out really well.
Yeah.
I think it came out all right.
I saw it this morning, and it does look really cool. I picked it up again and looked at it. I like that the barrels are red.
Mm.
So those that know the Hellhound kit, you can see kind of the tops and the bit of the barrels.
Mm.
And it was really nice because the vehicle's desert-themed. It gives you a bit of, I don't know, a standout thing. It's like, this is a Hellhound.
Yeah.
It's not just a Chimera.
I wanted to go for red purely because they're standard barrels. They're not going to go. They're not going to waste paint on their barrels.
Yeah.
To spray them the same colour of the tank, just to put them in the back of the tank to use them and throw them away.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So red was quite cool, and also
they link with your Blood Angels.
Linking with my Blood Angels, and also my board has got red barrels on it as well. So that it kind of like later on I can create like objectives. The Hellhound can't shoot the Torrent Flamer because he's not got enough fuel. He's got to go and
pick up the barrels and use the relic rules.
Use the relic rules.
Moving
to
the barrels to the Hellhound. Yeah. That'd be so cool.
We can look at that. Something that seems quite silly.
Yeah, that'd be so fun.
So it seems quite silly. It means that I can actually extend it out. And actually, I think the barrels... I don't know. I've glued the barrels in now, so they can't be taken out.
Yeah.
However, we can look at something.
Yeah.
We can definitely look at something. And that's kind of it for painting. I'm a little bit... I wanted to paint more, and I want to paint more. It's just work's crazy.
Yeah, you've been working a lot. You've come straight from work to here.
Yeah,
to record this. So
it's just dedication to the cause, guys. You know, it's difficult being me, so I have to try as much as I can.
I just want to point out that we're still in my workplace.
All right, fine.
So I haven't even left work. You've at least driven away from work.
Okay, fine. I'm just trying to look at my list. No, I haven't got anything else.
Games then.
Games played. So you go ahead.
I played 3 games this month.
We haven't played each other this month, have we?
No, we haven't.
No, that's quite a shame.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, next month we'll definitely have a game between us.
We were going to play each other, but you were too tired. I remember that. It was after the bunker. And then you played
that
game.
Oh, yeah, that's true, actually. I did.
Was it Ewan?
Ewan, yeah.
Yeah. So do you want to jump into that game?
Yeah, I'll jump into that game, as you've mentioned it.
Go ahead.
That was my Tyranids. So last episode I talked about my Tyranids being a largely gene stealer force with some monstrous creatures, outflanking, deep striking, flying on kind of thing, and trying to basically bring gene stealers into a competitive play. Not in the sense of a tournament or anything, like I'm much more about the fluff of the game and playing that way, but I wanted to, I don't know, you don't see gene stealers anymore, and I think that's a shame because they're so iconic, so I want to make a gene stealer list. And he hasn't been for a while, and he didn't have anyone else to play. So I obviously said, well, I've got my Nids here, let's play. And he brought his Chaos guys, and he plays like a Slaanesh army. He's got Lucius and a Sorcerer and obviously Marines and Predator and lots of stuff that you can get in the Chaos Codex, of course. He really wanted a game, so I said, okay, I've got my Nids with me. And then he did the kind of thing of, oh, okay, you've got Nids. I'll bring Flamers everywhere.
Flamers coming out of my ears.
It was really painful. But, I mean, the game
that's the only
did
issue.
Not go well for
like,
me.
it was fantastic to see Ewan. Like,
it was amazing.
And he hasn't been down all summer, and it was cool to see him.
Yeah.
The only issue you get whenever you have a pickup game like that where you go, I've only got my Nids, then you ultimately, all right, you might not necessarily do it on purpose, but subconsciously you're going to go, right, I'm playing Nids. Let's take fire.
Yeah.
And have you seen Alien? You're ultimately fire kills all aliens that look like Nids, so you take fire, and I would do it. Convert my Baal Preds to be Flamers rather than
that'd be good to me.
A Baal Flamer, but and it's a sucky thing, but it happens.
And I don't feel bad about that with Ewan. Like, Ewan did the smart thing. I don't, you know, again, we play friendly games, and it was a friendly game, and Ewan just wanted to play and kind of keep, you know, relearn the rules almost. But yeah, there was Flamers everywhere, you know, where he could get 2, he had 2, where he could have 3, he had 3, like, he had Chosen Squad, I think, with 4, like, just everywhere. And I ended up actually losing 4 out of 5 of my Gene Stealer Broods to Overwatch. 4 squads of 5 to Overwatch, because he was just rolling so many Flamers.
What are the stats? Because the Flamers obviously strength 5, isn't it?
No, strength 4, AP 5.
Right, and you're safe
and
is
Nids,
6.
Nids, Gene Stealers are toughness 4.
Yeah, so?
Save 5 plus. So no save.
So no save. So instant burn. Right, so I need to get some Flamers.
Yeah. so that really kind of, I don't know, took a bit of a punch to the gut there. And fair play, it was a tactic that definitely worked against me. I think I was just really tired. I've had quite a long week as well at work before that. Just running lots of events and stuff. It's that time of year for me. I was quite tired, and I feel really bad for him in some ways, because I kind of finished the game, and I hope I was as best an opponent I could be.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than you're playing an opponent, they're starting to lose, and then they get all, I don't know, what's the word about swearing? They get all stroppy about it. Stroppy's probably the word.
I mean, I definitely didn't get stroppy. I just felt really like, oh, it's going to be one of those kind of games.
Deflated.
Yeah, deflated is a good word. And I tried to keep going and kind
like
of push and
balloon.
Push. But after that, I was really out in the open, and half my reserves didn't come in, and just everything seemed to be going against me. And, you know, fair play to you, and he capitalised. And, I mean, it wasn't like he walked over me. I definitely did quite a bit of damage. And when my monsters did get there, they were hard to kill.
What was the end result?
Ewan won. I don't even know the score. I never said the points value. It was 1,500.
1,500 points.
Yeah, so I had to lose a few things.
If I remember rightly, you had a big ugly creature.
Most of them are.
On an objective, and he had to charge you to get you off the objective because you yeah. both were
elites.
To contest
it, basically.
Yeah, because there was no objective secured from having troop choices.
Yeah.
And he basically, it went on. So it hit turn five.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were winning, or it was a draw?
I was clawing a draw.
You were clawing a draw, and then basically if it ended turn five, it would have been... how terrible. If it ended then, you would have been drawing. And yeah. then if it went on turn six, he was going to charge you.
Then that was game.
Yeah, and then
that's basically what happened.
Yeah,
it was awesome to see Ewan. It was a good game. He played mostly painted models, which was nice to see.
Always good to see, considering you don't have painted
and
models.
I think we got to tell him about the painting challenge, so he's going to put that in for next month.
Good.
So that's really cool. And yeah, lots of positives, but yeah, they got their butt whooped a little bit.
Mm.
And it wasn't a good month for NIDS, because my second game, which was actually my first game of the month, was against Ben Jackson, playing his Ultramarines.
Ah, Ultramarine.
Ultras versus Nids, classic, Battle from a Crag style. We actually took a fortress that we've got. One of the guys donated a fortress, which is the old plastic Warhammer Fantasy fortress.
Was that the castle?
Yeah, the castle, basically.
Oh, okay, yeah. So how did
it
set out?
We set it out in the middle of the board.
Right.
Full castle, full kit, so four pillars, like bastion and things, four walkways, and one of them had a big drawbridge gate thing on it. And he deployed in that, and this is a custom scenario that we wrote.
Cool, always good
yeah, to see, yeah. We just made it up on the spot, and it actually worked really well. And basically the NIDS turn one came on from reserves,
okay,
but counted as just being deployed,
so very
could have soul and things like that,
very much like the game in Planet Strike where you've got the last stand.
That's Battle Missions.
Battle Missions,
the Space Marine Battle Missions. Yeah, they've got a hold of central point and the NIDS are all around them in the photo, I think.
I remember.
But yeah, so similar to that, they came on from board edges, but I had to roll for what board edge they came in, so I didn't know.
Not the best thing.
Well, it was quite cool because it represented them surrounding the fortress, so this was like the last...
The unminded swarm.
Yeah, I mean, the way we thought about it is that this is like the last fortress on the planet that's secure. And, you know, the NIDS are overrunning the planet. The Ultras have all pulled back to this space. And they're basically waiting to get picked up. And it's like a final stand, almost.
It's nearly a big virus bomb. That would solve it.
Yeah. But, yeah, so that's pretty much what we did. We basically said, if I could finish with NIDS in the fortress, or in the footprint of the fortress, then I'd get 3 points. If he had no NIDS in the fortress, and someone in the fortress still, then he got 3 points. And we played with Slay the Warlord, Slay the Warlord, Linebreaker. First Blood, that's the one.
Well done.
And we didn't have Linebreaker because obviously the deployment was impossible for him to do because I deployed off the board, technically. Mm. And we also added a rule before turn one on a 5+, sections of the keep blew up. The reason for that was that the NIDS basically snuck in and planted like bio bombs and stuff. Because we worked out that the only way the NIDS could get in was either through the drawbridge or over the walls. And it would have just been too hard for it to happen.
See, all I see when you say that is this scene from Lord of the Rings where...
Helm's Deep.
Yeah, Helm's Deep. Where it's like, take him down, Legolas! Yeah. Kill him!
That was kind of what we went for, that kind of vibe.
There's the orcs running towards the walls.
It wasn't orcs, NIDS.
No, I know, but in the film it was orcs.
Yeah. But yeah, and a couple went down and it just gave a bit of an opening and made it a bit more of a fair fight. It was a really bloody game. Really, really fun though. Like, I really enjoyed it. He got really unlucky. He fouled like 5 of 6 saves on 2+ for his Centurions, which is quite nasty on like turn one.
Yeah, quite a high pointed unit.
Yeah. So, I mean, that one dude still did so much damage, like grav gun cannon thing. So he was just taking wounds off monstrous creatures like nothing.
What kind of list did Ben bring? Would you say in terms of a tournament-esque, fluffy?
No, I would say, well, Space Marines are quite easy to do fluff, really.
Yep.
Like, he had a couple of tac squads, a scout sniper squad with Tellion. He had the Centurions. He had a bike squad. What else did he have? A couple of rhinos, which he didn't have. They actually drove around empty and they caused me right annoyance because he put the tactical squads that were in them in the fortress.
Yeah, of course.
Up in the bastions and stuff, shooting down. think that was about it, really.
Where did you play that game?
At the bunker. You weren't there.
All right, fine. Twist that knife.
Yeah, I will. but yeah, so that was a really fun game. That was 1750. And yeah, there wasn't crazy many highlights. Like, there was his scout sniper squad kept, like, they fought off two squads of gene stealers.
What?
My rolling was awful, and the scouts...
Sorry, scouts are effectively squishy bugs versus gene stealers as an assault unit.
Yeah.
And they fought them off.
Yeah. Twice.
That's really
like, they were taking casualties, but they kept winning combat by one.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Things like that. Like, it was just the way the game went. Like, you know.
They're basically guardsmen.
So, yeah. Oh, he also had, a Terminator Librarian and a Terminator Squad with them, and they deep struck. But they didn't come in until, like, turn four because of his reserve rolls. So they didn't really do much in the game. But, yeah, it was really fun to come up with that scenario and come up with the background and why are we fighting, what's going on. That's really fun to do. And I'd really encourage you to kind of think, why are these two armies against each other? Look at the board and use the scenery to make your story. And we did that. We literally built a board and made a story on it.
That's cool.
And that was probably one of my best games of the month. And it, probably one of the best games I've played in quite a while, actually. It was just fun. Ben was quite chilled out. Good gaming. And I can't really say much else about it.
Cool. Any other games?
I got one more, but I thought I'd maybe hand over to you. People are probably bored of my voice.
Right, so I started off the month with a Kill Team game down at Wayland Games in Hockley. We're quite fortunate to have it quite local, and they do some good scenery, good vibe. It's nice and dry.
It's a great place to go. You've probably seen it if you watch Striking Scorpion 82 on YouTube. His battle reports, which are awesome.
Yes, that's the kind of level of scenery and boards that are there.
Yeah.
So I played there. We played... some Kill Team. We were lucky enough to have... It was me, Mark, Tim, Simon and Chris. Simon and Chris kind of played each other. They were doing like orcs versus... I think it was demons. I never know how many armies Chris has got.
He's got, three, I think? He's got Chaos Space Marines, Chaos Demons and Dark Elder.
Do you know what? He was playing Dark Elder. No, he wasn't. No, he wasn't, because he just got the Codex. It's on the day the Codex came out. So he went down and got it. So they played each other, and Tim hasn't played in a while, in quite a long time, certainly since 7th edition came out. So it was quite good to have him play Mark, and then I can sort of stand there, and as I've played Kill Team a few times, I can sort of referee, give hints, tips and pointers, and sort of read rules from the book to sort of make the game smooth along, go along quite quickly. So they played, Tim has got some Chaos Kill Teams, which are quite cool. They on the way to being painted. I think it's just, again, with Tim, it's just time to be able to do it.
Yeah.
But he's certainly really enthusiastic about getting involved and playing games, so that's quite cool. Mark travelled down to come and have a game.
We spoke about Mark last episode, didn't we? Just being the friendliest guy ever, and even though he walks all over you because he's an amazing player, you don't feel bad about it.
See, that makes me feel even better, because I actually played Mark and I actually won.
It was Kill Team.
It was Kill Team. But we'll go back to that in a minute. So Mark played his... Are they Praetorians?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're Praetorians. Beautiful models. Absolutely fantastic paint job. And when you talk to him about them, he's so modest. He just says about how, I start with the base coats and just sort of get to this point.
And they're amazing painted.
They're not base coat. That is more than just a base coat. But they're really good, really, really well painted. And they played their game, and I sort of watched, and it was really cool to watch. And then when they finished, I played Mark. I played my Inquisitor list type list. So I used a lot.
What was in it?
So there were. Oh, let's have a look. There were 10.
Yeah, just roughly.
There were 10 acolytes.
Okay, cool.
And then I added in another two acolytes with three acolytes. Sorry, with plasma guns.
Okay.
So it kind of had their own power armor. They had hotshot las guns.
These are your guys from Anvil.
Anvil miniatures. Yeah. So I used them, which were quite cool against guard because effectively guard just die.
Yeah.
When you shoot them with hotshot las guns. It was a good game. We were starting as a short table edge, no, long table edge deployment.
Oh, okay.
And the objective was in the middle, and we had to basically steal the objective.
Run for it.
Yeah, run for it. Yeah. And running for it when you're outnumbered 3-1 is a little bit difficult. So you sort
quite
of have
scary,
to,
even though they're guardsmen.
Yeah, so you have to be kind of a little bit more tactical. And then you realise that actually guards, hotshot las guns, are actually really short ranged.
Yeah.
So you have to move forwards and you have to get shot. But they're in power armor, so it worked out pretty well. And then I won. It was by one. It was a just only just made the win.
Yeah.
So it was a very narrow victory, and I'm just never going to play Mark ever again now because I've won a game. I do need to play as Sam Hain because they're ridiculous. They're just ridiculously good. So I need to get in a game against those. What game after that? I played Chris, a Demon versus Blood Angel game, which was 1,500 points, I think. I want to say 1,000 points, actually. Anyway, it was between 1,000 and 1,500. I need to write this stuff down when I play the games. So we played again at Whaling Games. It was a very... it was 1,000 points. It was definitely 1,000 points because it was on a 4x4.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So it was really close quarter fighting. So I think turn one he was into assault with me.
Wow.
So it was definitely...
This is Demons versus...
Blood Angels.
Blood Angels.
So definitely a bit of a hair racing game. I think I got really lucky that I stole the initiative... and first turn popped his the Demon Walker thing.
Soul Grinder.
Soul Grinder with a Laz Cannon first turn and made it explode, and he took out some of his guys.
Awesome.
Wounded his HQ.
Not for him, but
awesome. Not for him. For me, it was awesome because I like got demons scared the crap out of me anyway. I played those, and he was like I said into assault first turn, so he had his weird dog things that come and attack.
Cornhounds.
So he had his Cornhounds. So they were pretty quick, pretty swift, and I basically lined up all my bikes and just did a bike wall against his Cornhounds.
That'd be an interesting fight.
It was, and it was sort of
did
like
he
I
get
lost,
the charge
on the first turn. Yeah,
ooh.
So I lost on the first turn. I lost like two. So very, very lucky.
Only two bikes.
His rolling wasn't the best rolling. And it was very much like I took two of his, he took one of mine, he took two of mine, I took one of his. And because I had my Sangreni Priest with him.
And Feel No Pain.
Yeah. I also had Fearless. So they weren't going anywhere. Neither was his.
Just got stuck in it.
Yeah, so we're just stuck completely where we were. It was an objective-based game, and the objectives were in the buildings on either corner.
Okay, Emperor's Will.
Emperor's Will, yeah. So we did that. And I think it was turn four, turn four, that I nearly basically tabled him. So we sort of ended the game there because quite frankly, there's no point carrying on if there's physically nothing you can do.
And
Chris is really good for that because it means that he won't just give up when he's losing.
Yeah.
He sort of evaluates it and goes, well, actually, there physically isn't a way I can win. So there's no point continuing. And I do respect him for that. Sometimes it's a little bit annoying because you're having fun and you're effectively wiping the floor and killing them.
Yeah.
But then you kind of think they're not having fun anymore because they're just losing. So what's the point in playing anymore? Might as well just stop.
Yeah, completely. I think being gracious in your victory is just as important as being gracious in your loss.
Yeah, exactly. So, we ended it there, and that was the game. I think I won something like 7-2.
Okay.
Something like that. But your last game. I've got one more, so if you want to do your last one.
Cool. Yeah, I'll jump back to my last one. My last one was played yesterday, actually, with another Ben. there's a couple of Bens, so they know who they are. And I played my Orcs. So that was really cool. Played my 1,000-point Orcs because they haven't moved anywhere. Can't play my War Boss yet because me and Sam haven't done our challenge thing.
Yeah, I need to look at my Grey Knights.
Which is basically we're doing Grey Knights and Orcs, and we're progressing at the same points level, and we're buying, building, painting.
Have you finished your Orcs now?
No, I found more. I've actually not done a whole boy squad.
Okay, let me know when you're done, and I'll stop. I'll paint my three guys.
Yeah, that's pretty much how Grey Knights work. But yeah, so it was really cool to get them out. Ben suggested them, and actually I was like, oh, I'm not bothered. I want to play Nids again because I've had two losses. I wanted to kind of redeem them a little bit. But I was like, okay, you want to play my Orcs? Fine. You know, I haven't played them for a while. And I really enjoyed the game, actually. I was really glad he convinced me to play my Orcs because I really love that army. The Codex is really strong. Weird boys are fun. Just lots of good things about Orcs that I like.
So I caught the middle of that game, and at the point that I saw it, your weird boy was running away.
Yeah, he did fail a leadership and then fail a mob brawl and then carry on running.
So did he run Orc? I left before. Did he run all the way off the board? Or?
Yeah, he ran all the way off the board. We'll get to that in a minute. That's the one gripe I have about this one game.
Okay.
But yeah, we played 1,000 points. He brought Imperial Fist, Space Marines, Sentinels of Terror, and had lots of tactical squads, Dreadnought, Dev Squad. I think that was pretty much it. And I had my 1,000-point Orc list, which is a battle wagon with 4 rockets, 11 looters, 30 Orc boys with a weird boy, power claw knob, truck boy squad, shooter boys with a power claw knob, 10 shooter boys because I have the points, and a war buggy in fast attack, and a Dacker jet. So that's my 1,000 points. And we deployed, and we were playing Maelstrom of War. So it was cool. Haven't played one of those. That's the one with the tactical objective cards. We got the mission where you cannot discard the Seize Initiative 1-6 cards.
Okay.
So even if it's on the other side of the board, you cannot discard it. And the reason for that is that you can steal your opponent's. So if I have a secure objective 6, and on his turn he gets onto objective 6, when the turn ends, he gains that point from me.
That's cool.
It was really fun, actually.
That kind of evens the playing field towards being more of a match game, so the people that draw the best cards don't necessarily always win.
Yeah, that is one of the things with Maelstrom. We had the house rule, which I think a lot of people do, where if you get a card that's impossible, like kill a Psyker and they don't have a Psyker, you just redraw immediately.
Which is cool. Awesome.
Which, you know, it makes sense. I don't think that's a big problem with anyone anymore. And yeah, we played, and I went ahead quite early. I got really lucky and blew up his Dreadnought before it even moved. Just really lucky dice rolls with my looters. Got 3 sixes to glance, so it just died. So that was really cool. And yeah, and it was quite bloody, quite a lot lost. I mean, orcs tend to die quite a lot. That's just what they do. But I got quite a few tactical marines off the board. Like, he had something like 40. He had like 4 squads of 10, which is quite a lot in 1,000 points for space marines. So it was quite scary having all those rapid fire bolters. And when he's within half range, he gets rerolls because of the Imperial Fist tactics. So it was really scary charging him.
So I when I left the game, when I left the centre and you were playing here, so when I left, Ben walked me out, and he was really worried. He was like, Matt's going to win. And I was like, but he's only got one truck left, or one battle wagon.
I'd lost a lot. I'd lost a lot.
But then he was like, yeah, but it's a battle wagon. There's nothing I can do against it.
Yeah.
Do you think that even though he had so much, did you think you could still win it at that point? Because had one squad left.
Yeah, I had lost a lot that game. I had a flyer that was coming back on. So he'd flown on, done some shots, jinked, lost a whole point, but nothing crazy bad, and then threw off the board.
Yeah.
So I knew that was coming back in. And I had my Dacker Fortress, as I call it. So battle wagon, 4 rockets, and 11 looters inside, you know, snapshotting out the top with their D3 shots.
Yeah.
I roll them very luckily. I tend to get 3 shots or 2 shots. I very rarely get 1 shot with them, which has been pretty awesome. And the problem was, is the one mistake I think Ben made is he put his I deployed first, and he put his Devastators on the other side of the board from my battle wagon. So the only guns in the game that could hurt it his army were on the other side of the board.
How did he run his devs?
He had 3 missiles with flak and a las cannon. In that
okay,
game.
So the last
he doesn't
cannon.
Always run them that way, but that's what he ran that way.
So the front armour of a battle wagon's 14, isn't
14,
it?
14, but sides are 11.
Okay.
So it's basically a ton of armour up front, but if you can get side shots. Luckily, there was a big building in the middle, like we were playing on a building board. So his devs just could never get a line of sight to my battle wagon, so it was driving around and just orcs shooting out of it. And
Shoot.
Yeah. And that was working really well, so I understand. The one thing I said to Ben, and I'll... You know, I know he'll be listening, and I'm sure he'll be fine with me saying it because we're good friends. He got a bit mopey towards the middle of the game, the same way that I did against Ewan.
Yeah.
Because the tactical objective cards in the first half of the game were going really well for me. So the score was something like 8-2.
I think that's I think the tactical objectives card, if it's going really badly for you, if it was me and you, and it was going really well for you, and it's going really bad for me, because it's so random, sometimes you kind of feel there's nothing you can do to put it back.
And I think that's what happened to Ben. The problem was that I was looking at the table, and I was looking at the objectives down, and I had secure objectives that were on his side of the table, and he hadn't got to them yet, but he was definitely going to. Also, he had Kingslayer, and this is my one gripe about this game. So that we ended up, I'll get to the end, we ended up drawing 12-12. The reason for that is my weird boy ran off the table, who was my warlord, and because he had Kingslayer is a tactical objective card that gives you D3 victory points for killing the warlord, and Slay the Warlord is still in effect. It's a special rule that's still in effect on the mission. So he ended up getting, he rolled very well, obviously, and he got 3 points for the card, and then obviously the Slay the Warlord. So he gained 4 points instantly.
Which is never good.
Which is never good. And that's what drew us the game.
I think the 4 points is ridiculous. As in, there's just 4 points is the difference between winning and losing. Like, 1 point you can kind of pull back from, but yeah. 4 points is an instant lead.
Yeah, I mean,
You're going to need Slay the Warlord, First Blood, and Linebreaker just to even get any close. And another one. So you've.
The thing was, is that it was a really fun game, and we drew, and I'm happy with that. I would have been happy if I lost. But I had quite good control of the game. Although I'd lost quite a few casualties, I knew I was winning, and I knew that he couldn't do much to my battle wagon and had to manoeuvre away from me and things like this. I was kind of controlling the board quite well, and that Kingslayer just completely flipped the game over. Now, well done for him. He got out of his mopey state, and he realised that he could pull it back and fought really hard for that and did some really smart moves with movement of squads and all that stuff. He actually, at one point, it came down to he failed a leadership role and ran off an objective.
Yeah.
And if he'd stayed on that objective, he would have won 13-12.
And it's always really close, isn't it?
Yeah. So that was an awesome game. And there's a few things. Kingslayer is a overpowered card, in my opinion. I think it should just be an extra point, because you've already got Slay the Warlord in effect. So it basically gives you 2 points rather than 1 point for Slay the Warlord.
Yeah.
I think that's reasonable. But a D3, so you can potentially get 4 like he did. Just it changes games, and it makes the Maelstrom just a bit too, like you say, a bit random, and just throws it up in the air a bit too much to enjoy.
I suppose if you step away from it and go, it's a game.
Oh, completely. And I really love the Maelstrom, and I'm really glad that I got to play one this month, because I haven't played one for a couple of months now. And they're really fun, and it changes the game up. Normally you play the normal 6 missions, the Echoes of War, I think they're called. And to be able to play a Maelstrom, just change it up and get the cards out, just for a fun game with a friend, was brilliant. That was my last game.
I actually found out that I've got 2 games.
Cool.
Say all of them. So my 2 games were, my first one was against Simon, which led on from our last narrative game where Simon had to get the red pot of paint.
Yeah, the pot of paint.
Yeah, so the orcs could get to the next galaxy. Awesome. And then my other game after that was against Mark again, and that was 1,000 points... He brought some Red Scorpions down, wanted to try them out because somebody gave them all the Red Scorpions they had.
Wow.
Why doesn't that happen to me?
Yeah.
ever. So he wanted to try them out and see what they're like. And so I happily obliged and fielded some Blood Angels. So my first game was against Simon. And as you may or may not know, we had a campaign where basically the orcs are trying to steal the red paint from the Blood Angels, because obviously Baal Preds are fast attack vehicles, makes them go faster. So the orcs can use that to power their ships to get to the next star system to raid and attack and kill Humies. Yeah. Is that how you say it? Humies?
Humies, whatever you want to say.
Really hate it when people say stuff like that or talk.
It's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't mind reading it because they're actually orcs, but you're not.
Yeah, exactly. So
being an orc player myself, come
so
on.
Stop trying to do
no,
it.
No. If they want to do it, that's okay.
No, we're not being a politically nice podcast.
Well, I am, just in general.
Right, okay. Fine. So anyway,
he lost that game, didn't he?
No, I lost the game. Because I lost the hoodie.
No.
Oh, the first one. Simon lost.
Spoilers.
Simon lost the first game, whereby he didn't manage to take the pot in 6 turns. Yeah. So it meant that Blood Angels sent in reinforcements and wiped out the orcs, which was quite cool. So the second game was the escorting of a Adeptus Mechanicus. Is that right? Adeptus Mechanicus?
Mechanicus.
It was the escorting a Mechanicus priest off of the world, Blood Angels Mechanicum world, in order to protect the schematics and the secret of the red paint. And the practicality, the idea was I had all vehicles and I had to get one of the vehicles that I noted as the one the Mechanicum agent was held in. I had to get it off the board. We deployed short table edges.
Yeah.
Simon didn't know which vehicle he was in, so he sort of played a bit of a double trick. So I put two Baal Preds were around a Rhino, and I put a Razorback out in the open. Next to the big shooty shell thing, which Vindicator. Is called Vindicator. There we go.
Shooty shell thing.
Well, it shoots big blast templates.
You've got to write that on the side of one of your Vindicators.
A big shooty shell
big
thing.
Big shooty shell
thing. If I was an orc player, then it would make sense.
Yeah, it would.
But I'm a human, and I like Space Marines.
All right.
So the game started off with Simon deploying quite aggressively. I messed up in the first two turns, in all honesty. I didn't move things. I could have shot.
Yeah, you forgot to shoot your Bile Prince.
I forgot to shoot both my Bile
Prince. That was there, yeah, I remember you telling me.
Which had a load of looters in it, which later on in the game decided to wipe out a squad. And it was pretty sloppy my first two turns, and then I sort of got back into it a bit more. Yeah. And sort of tried thinking a bit more tactically.
It was still pretty close, though.
It was close. It basically ended that the agent was in the Laz cannony shooty thingy.
Yeah.
Razorback, there we go. The Mechanicum agent was in the Razorback, and Simon blew the Razorback up after he destroyed every other vehicle on the table. So the double bluff worked. If you leave the vehicle alone, people won't shoot at it. So he got blown up, and it worked out that...
You just couldn't...
This was turn five... No, end of turn four.
End of turn four.
End of turn four, and I would have had to run. I would have had to move six, ran six, both turns. It would have had to have gone to turn seven.
Yeah, turn seven.
So I pretty much just called it there because he had a squad of looters stood by the his.
Yeah, he was gonna die.
There was no way him outside a vehicle was gonna work. So I called it there, and it meant that I lost the Warmaster hoodie that we played for.
Of course.
So Simon,
do you
want to
explain that?
So the Warmaster.
If they haven't
hoodie,
listened to episode one, they won't know.
Obviously, I'd recommend going back and listening to episode one of the Adeptus Terror. So it started off by listening to the independent characters. They have the psychic hoodie, which is basically you play for it. You have one person who controls the hoodie, and people can challenge them and basically steal it. And then they become the War Master or the owner of the psychic hoodie. So we sort of stole the idea, changed the name, rebranded it and made it our own. So we have the War Master hoodie, and I held it for quite a long time. I think I defended it for like 7 or 8 games. So
yeah, you had it for a little bit.
So then Simon came and took it. So I have to get it back, basically. So
I might try and get it first.
You can try, and I'll beat you as well.
Ooh. Well, we are going to have a game next
week. We need to have a game.
We have to fight Simon.
You need to fight
Saturday.
Simon first. Yeah. So I lost the game. I made the game up. I effectively borrowed rules from elsewhere to try and get this vehicle across the table.
Yeah, I think it's an old second or third edition game.
I think so. It basically worked out that all I needed to do was to get that one vehicle off the edge of the board, and I would auto win. There was no Slay the Warlord, line break, anything like that. And Simon just had to stop it from happening. So he didn't actually need to kill any vehicles. He just needed to block the way for me to get off.
Yeah.
So it meant that I didn't get him off, so I lost the game. So now it's Simon's turn to create the next round.
That'll be really cool.
Round of the game. So I hope it's something along the same lines, like I have to get the agent back, or maybe a kill team to retrieve the agent, which would be quite cool.
That could be quite cool.
But who knows? It's up to him, not up to me.
That sounds really cool.
So that was quite a cool game. Nice little narrative game. And then I played Mark
about five minutes after. Wasn't it?
So I was pretty drained by this point. And he took 1,000 points of the Red Scorpions that someone gave him. And I just threw together a couple of units to make up what I thought was 1,000 points.
Yeah.
And proceeded to get my bum handed to me.
Yeah, that was pretty nasty. I was still playing Ewan this same day I played Ewan with my nids.
Yeah.
I was getting absolutely abused, and so were you.
It was pretty awful, I'm not going to lie. Lost a tank first turn. Then charged 2 Bile Preds forwards, lost them to second turn, ran guys across. The best thing that happened was my bike squad shooting some guys in their building and killed them all.
Woo.
But other than that, the 30 other people on their team decided to shoot everything else.
Through you.
Yeah, so it was a good game. I'm never going to say any game was a bad game. It was just tactically, I don't know what happened.
You kind of threw a list together, and it was a last minute thing. We weren't sure if he was coming.
Yeah, so
I'm not making excuses out for you or anything. But...
No, of course not. Obviously, being a good grade A player that I am, I should be able to throw together any list at any moment. It was a good game. I enjoyed the game. It was a little bit. I found it really difficult. I don't really like throwing lists together and getting a surprise.
Yeah.
Because I tend to just throw in what looks pretty rather than what works, which isn't a bad thing. But for me, I generally will lose if that happens. But that's all of my games. Promises for next month. Obviously, you owe me a Dimecarion if you don't do your drop pods.
Yeah, I'm going to build 2 drop pods, and I'm not making any other pledges because basically, if I can't do that, I lose my new lovely shiny
Forge World model. I'm going to clip it apart and you're going to have it.
I'm going to build 2 drop pods without fail.
Right, okay, cool. So I will hold you to that. I've got these 2 wyverns to paint. And so I've got those to do. But because of the kit and the way I want to paint it, I'm going to have to build it separately and then put it together.
Yeah.
And I know you hate it, so don't pull that face.
No, I understand why, because of the engine block and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and obviously the massive rotating turret that's on top. So I have to, I'm going to do it. It's just going to take a bit of patience, and with the weather and the evening turning dark
stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be an awful transpray, especially with my two tone color.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try that, and I also would like to go through my Warhammer closet thing to sort out all my bits and pieces that I've got laying around.
Yeah, that's always a good thing to do
in order just to sort of get some order and restore some normality to it.
Yeah,
And then sort of take stock of what I've got.
Yeah, cool.
Cool. So the next, we're going to end it there for this segment, go into a bit of a break, and we're going to start the next one with the pain and joys of 40Ks. 40Ks? Pain and joy of 40K. See you soon.
See ya.
Hey guys, it's Matt here. If you want to be involved in this awesome community, if you want to have input into the show and what we cover, then please go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheAdeptusTerror podcast. Thanks a lot and see you soon.
Let's all go to Facebook. Let's all go to Facebook. Let's all go to Facebook and give that page a like. And welcome back. So this is the second segment, which is the pain and joy of 40K. This section, this segment is all about mine and Matt's views on what's going on in 40K at the moment. Any pain we've seen, any joy we've got over, could be anything. What's
something
coming
to do with the hobby, could be absolutely anything, really.
Yeah.
Something we're loving, something we're hating.
Good. So if I jump straight in then, my pain at the moment is actually the podcast. It makes it sound really awful to say it like that. What we've had so far is we released an episode, 3 weeks later than we wanted to?
Yeah, took so long.
Just because it wasn't even editing, it was waiting there to be uploaded. And then the providers we were going through, we couldn't upload the podcast to them. They weren't getting back to us on any
technical
help.
Support or anything. Technical support.
So we ended up just, we were really worried that we recorded the whole thing wrong, in the wrong format, and wasted, two and a half hours. Maybe more.
Of our lives. And editing time as well.
Yeah, and we have actually recorded an episode before this, which landed on the cutting room floor because we didn't get it out in time, and we weren't really happy with how it was coming out.
Yeah.
So it ended up as a pilot that we don't really want anyone to listen to anymore.
Yeah, that's gone. That's
dead. We've deleted that.
Disappeared.
So we were really worried that we'd not wasted, but we'd spent another couple of hours of our lives putting something together that's never going to see the light of day.
Yeah.
And luckily, we found the new provider. Luckily, we although it's not as good a deal, it is a good deal that we're getting from them. We're really happy with them so far. We spoke to their online tech support team before we even paid to join.
Yeah, they're really helpful.
Really helpful. Really, really helpful on how to get everything onto iTunes. Yeah. So it's really good.
Yeah, if you want to know who they are, if you're thinking of starting a podcast or want to change, let us know either on our Facebook page, which the advert should have happened already.
Or will happen.
Not sure how the editing will go.
As it's you.
As it's me, yeah. Or email us on theadeptusterrorpodcast@gmail.com.
Oh, what a shameless plug there.
I thought I'd throw that in.
No, that's cool. So it's theadeptusterrorpodcast@gmail.com. So far, we've got a little app that records how many people have listened to the show. So we're up to about 150 today, you look?
Yeah, 158 plays.
158 plays in a week? Is it a week?
Yeah, well, yeah, I think we uploaded Saturday morning.
So less than a week and we've got 150 plays. So obviously we want to say a massive thank you to everyone listening has listened, just because we haven't done any advertisement. People obviously just found it online. Yeah.
Obviously our friends as well, who knew we were doing it, they've supported us and given us some good feedback before we even aired. So that was really cool. So thanks all those guys. Hope you keep listening.
Yeah, and really, as bad as it's going to sound, recommend it to your friends, recommend it to other people who play 40K, just because we want to get, we want it to be a big, good podcast that people can just listen
to. We're in this for the long term. We're not mucking about. We want it to be an awesome podcast.
Absolutely.
And I'm kind of glad that we had all those issues, because we learnt quite a lot for it.
Yeah.
So in some ways, although it's been your pain and definitely my pain, I think we've learnt a lot, and I'm really pleased with our provider now. Getting it up on iTunes and all of that. And yeah, hopefully this is the set in stone, long-lasting
podcast. So the aim is to record on the last Thursday of the month.
Roughly, yeah.
Roughly. And then produce it within the first week of the month and put it up onto the iTunes.
Yeah, the first Saturday.
So we're roughly aiming for one a month. Obviously, this has been a week before recording and publishing. So it's kind of like a bonus.
Yeah, kind
because of our errors and our faults that we couldn't sort out, you kind of get in two in 1 month, which is awesome. Yeah. But regularly, it will be once a month.
Yeah, once a month is what we think we can commit to and do well. Yeah, if you've got some serious things that you want to talk about the podcast, like I say, email us, which you've already mentioned, or Facebook us, and we'll happily chat that through. Obviously, we want you to leave honest reviews, but if you think it's that awful that you want to do one star, rather than leave that one star and make us feel really rubbish, talk to us.
Yeah.
You know, we're people and we're trying to make this the best we can.
Yeah. Cool. So let's get off the shameless plugging of our own podcast. That was my pain, basically trying to sort out tech, which is always a pain.
Technology can be awesome, but really annoying.
Really annoying. So what's your pain?
My pain is actually something that doesn't affect me in game, but really winds me up. And that's chaos. Now, I'm not saying that chaos winds me up. They're a real staple in the fluff in the background for anyone that knows.
I don't know, they wind me up. A flaming dragon.
the demon engines, as they are. But, I mean, that's a good kind of segue into what I want to talk about. I find it really frustrating, and I would find it frustrating if I was a chaos player, that officially, at least, I cannot run certain allies or certain bits of war gear that my Space Marine brothers, who are loyal, can't.
Yeah, somehow we must have misplaced some of our war gear in the time of the heresy.
Yeah, the heresy, we have everything with the same, we turn on each other, and then 40k, we just don't have it anymore. And some of that's okay, I understand that, but I mean, some of the big fluff behind Chaos Warbands is that they're looting and keeping what they kill and transforming it and desecrating it into a heretical engine.
Basically, the GW alignment is put more spikes on it.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, here's an example. The first thing that really winds me up is that now, because of 7th edition, officially, and I say officially, you cannot ally Guard with Chaos.
Now, that is ridiculous. I understand they get cultists, but a Guardsman is not a cultist.
Yeah.
In terms of regimented, they still have regiments, you'd have just Chaos leaders.
Yeah, well, but I mean, there's Renegade Militia, and I do understand that. I mean, not that long ago now, probably maybe a week ago, 2 weeks, the new Imperial Armour book came out for Chaos. So I think there are some lists in there that are to do with Renegade Militia, which are kind of Chaos Guard. So maybe this is answering some of my...
Issues,
I guess, is a good word. But I haven't got that book, so I'm going to voice them. But yeah, it just makes no sense. You know, Chaos creeps in, takes over governors and leaders and commanders, and then they slowly, through their command and leadership, corrupt the people from the bottom. It's almost top-down way. It does happen other ways, but that is the main way. And yeah, it just doesn't sit right with me. The other thing is, like I say, war gear, you know, no drop pods, no land speeders.
Somehow they must have lost...
No attack bikes. You can have bikes, but no attack bikes.
Yeah, they obviously lost those, the adjoining sidecar.
Yeah.
With the multi-mount on it.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, let's say a Chaos Warband come up against a scouting White Scars army. And let's say the Chaos Warband ambush them and kill them all. They're going to rob the bikes as well as the attack bike.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's got three wheels. Let's leave this one.
Yeah, that's against Zinch. You can't take three wheels. You know, and it just makes no sense, you know. In the fluff, you read all the time of Chaos invading a planet. How do they get the Marines on the ground?
Well, it's a segment of levers
Storm
and pulleys.
Stormraven? Oh, no, not a Stormraven.
Levers and pulleys.
Levers and pulleys, yeah. Now, I mean, you've got, again, some of the Forge World stuff. Storm Eagles and Fire Raptors can be taken through Chaos. That's really cool that Forge World have done that. But, you know, the standard Stormraven, for example, or the standard drop pod can't be taken.
See, I thought they had the drop pod, the upside down one that looks like the weird claw
thing. I think
thing.
They've stopped doing it. There are 30k ones. Yeah, have a look. But
sorry, I'm on my laptop.
I mean, even if they have, that's a Forge World kit that's like something like £60-70. It's not a cheap way of doing it,
and it's not in their codex either.
Yeah, you have to get the data slate or the Imperial Armour book that we've already mentioned, which has just been redone. So, I mean, again, that book may have answered all my questions and annoyances. and this may be a bit of a mute point, but currently, and for all the people who can't afford that book, which is a lot of people, I mean, some of my friends play Chaos, we've already mentioned Chris and Tim and Ewan, they're not probably got the time or the money to be able to buy that Imperial Armour book.
Right, so on the Forge World website, the only transport they have is a Fire Raptor gunship.
Yeah.
And the Storm Eagle for the its counterpart. Obviously, that's a £98 kit.
Yeah,
it's quite.
I have one.
Yes, you have one. Is it built yet? Is it painted yet?
No.
No. Okay. So sorry to point out that.
Yeah. Thanks.
So basically, they have no Storm Raven, and they have no drop pods. It's literally just that one.
Yeah.
One flyer.
Yeah. That's they'd stop making it.
Fighters and stuff. But
yeah. So I mean, for me, I would want to say to my Chaos friends, and if you're listening, feel free, let's organise a game and bring those stuff. I would have no problems, as long as you've got the rules for them, you know, like a Space Marine Codex or even a printed out page or the rules written down so you know the whole points and all of that stuff. I don't see why you can't bring anything in the fluff that is Space Marine that could be Chaos Marine.
See,
I mean, Centurions and the new tanks, you could argue, you know, they might be new 40k designs, so the Chaos don't have them, and if they even took them over, they might not know how to use them. I'm okay with that, but things like drop pods, attack bikes, things that are staples of this universe, I don't see why you can't bring them. And if you're going to stop your Chaos friends bringing those kind of things so they can play, in my opinion, a better fluff-based list and have a better fun game, then chill out. Like, I don't know, I don't get it.
So on the Forge website, they have the, what's it called? The Legion Carabidus? Assault Claw? Carabidus?
Yeah, the Caradris.
Whatever. Assault that Claw. One. But that, even in the blurb, it says it's a ship-by-ship assault vehicle. So it's the claws, obviously. It's the upside-down claw-looking thing.
Yeah.
Where they fire at another ship, it locks on, and they can be dropped out the bottom into the ship. So it's not even like a land four type drop pod.
Yeah.
No, I agree. It's a little bit of a letdown. Somehow the Chaos Tech Marines are a little bit lost for
getting
there. Yeah,
the Warpsmiths. I mean, the one argument I've heard so far from someone I was talking through it with is that Chaos have access to Demon Engines. So the Mauler Fiend, the Forge Fiend, and the Helldrake. You know, and they're powerful units.
They could ride their Helldrakes to the battle.
Yeah.
Just standing on top with like a long chain.
Yeah,
that'd be great. No, do that. That's how I'd get them to the battle.
Yeah, that would be cool. But, you know, they have those Demon Engines, and fair enough. But I'm not asking for the Space Marine Codex to be moulded with the Chaos Codex. I'm just asking for some of the staple things, like drop pods, to be accessible. And if you're a Chaos player out there and you'd love to do that, talk to your friends about it. Don't just go, oh, I can't bring them, how sad is this? You know, make the game yours. Play an army that you want to play. And yeah, and that's just my pain, really. It just winds me up a little bit. And, I mean, I'm not even a Chaos player. It just winds me up for them. And they're probably not even bothered, but yeah. Check out the Imperial Armour book. It probably answers all the questions I've mentioned. Anyway, that's my pain. I'm going to shut up now.
Right. See, I always feel the pains are slightly ranty, but that's not how we mean them to be. But it's just something that we sort of look at, like the podcast thing. It kind of got to us for a couple of weeks of not working out. Like the Chaos thing.
It could be so much worse, man.
It's imbalanced. So let's move straight on to our joys to kind of balance it out a little bit more and to say that actually we do like 40k in some way or another. my joy is actually Army Painter, the company, the people that produce the paints, and my...
Sorry, that's just funny. Army Painter, the guys who produce paints. That should be their little slogan.
Do I take the mickey out of your joy? I did. Sorry, okay, that's fine. So, Army Painter. My Guard Force is basically sprayed using the brown and the cream. And it's very technically layered, and I can't tell you my secrets. But basically, I spray one, and then I spray the other.
Yeah.
And that is effectively the base, that's it. Like there's a few details that I use, like washes and highlights and stuff, but
Typhus Corrosion,
yeah, effectively it's just two layers of paint from a can, so they're really cool. And they even say on their cans that this can be used as a base layer and no need to spray it black or cream or white or anything like that, just use these. And actually using them for the last three vehicles, I did my tester one.
Yeah.
It's really effective. They're a little bit tricky to use. So if you spray it directly onto a vehicle, I found that the pigment bunches up and it causes it to look like it's been left in super glue and then dipped in sand.
Yeah.
So what I'd recommend from myself from using it is pop a pair of gloves on, and then hold the tank and hold the spray a little bit away from the tank, and then just sort of like a dusting motion, so just sweep backwards and forwards, even coats. Imagine how if you saw someone painting a car, sort of type thing, and then my results have been
Been really good, man. I really like your tanks; they're coming out so well. It's a really cool way, an easy way of doing a desert effect.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming you can use other colours and get the same effect.
Exactly. So Army Painter is probably the one that I'd say is my joy because I use them. Obviously, there are others out there. But the simple effect of having the cream, then layering the brown on top, gives like a mud and like a dust sort of effect because it's like a reddish brown. So it fits really well with my barrel board, which is quite cool. That's my joy.
That's really simple. Just, that's cool.
Just third parties producing good stuff that work with our models.
Mm.
And your joy?
My joy is eBay purchases.
The many eBay purchases you've made.
I mean, I love eBay. I've used it so many times. I've used it to pretty much buy most of my army. I mean, I don't think actually my NID army. One thing has come from GW.
Really?
I mean, it's all been eBay.
Other than your Diamond Carrion. Oh, sorry, say my Diamond Carrion. Oh, Fortune. Okay. We're going to be pernickety.
Yeah, I am. But yeah, so I'm really happy that I've been able to save a lot of money, because this hobby can get expensive, in building an army. And I mean, sometimes you have to be very careful. I've definitely made bad eBay purchases and spent either too much money or bought something that looked better.
So my tester vehicle for my my guard is a prime example of that. I got it, and it was a, what are they called?
Chimera.
Chimera, yes, Chimera. See, my words escaped me today. My Chimera. And when I got it in the photo, it looked really cool, really well painted. And I was like, it's fine, I'll just
I remember you showing it to me and being like, yeah, that's cool.
And it was awesome. And then it turned up and I was just like, wow, they've painted it with poster paint. It was not as good as I thought. And then trying to strip it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
And they glued the turret still. And
yeah, lots of things.
You can get some really bad kits.
You can do, yeah.
But... On the flip side of that.
I mean, on the complete flip side of that, before it becomes a pain.
sorry.
I mean, I've had amazing success with eBay, and just looking at what I got this month, I got that Trigon. Came fully built, fully painted, and it's well painted, thin layers. I'm going to spray over it because it doesn't match my paint scheme, but no gripes with that, and it's like pretty much half price, if not a bit cheaper. I got a metal lictor, picked that up for like, £5 for a lictor. That's awesome. And that was the only one that I needed. I picked up the five scouts for £5.50.
Can you? £5.50 for five scouts?
And one of the guys, I didn't realise this until yesterday, I looked at them. One of the guys hasn't got the normal cape. He's got a cape made of green stuff. And it's so good, it looks like it's moulded. It looks like it is, because they're base coated white. So I didn't notice. And it looks exactly the same as if he was a model with a cape. Guy who did that is phenomenal at green stuff. I would love to learn. And they were amazing, and that meant that was the last scouts I needed for my Space Wolves. So really, I mean, eBay's amazing thing to look at. You can get really addicted to it and buy more than you need. I've definitely done that. Bad purchases.
I think I was watching up to 70 to 80 items.
Can happen.
Yeah, it was awful.
Yeah. But I mean, to go on to find that one thing or bits, it's a great place to get bits. I got those 7 or 8 eight chainswords for my blood claws, because I run out of chainsword arms out of all my bits at home. So that was really awesome that I got those for a couple of pounds. So check eBay out for anything you need. Be careful, but it's an amazing place to get models and get them cheaper than you would normally pay. So yeah, that's my joy.
Fantastic. So that's the end of our Pain and Joy segment. A little bit shorter than last time, but we're going to take a break and we'll come back with our 40K spotlight. And welcome back to the, what we're on, third segment now?
Yeah.
So this is the 40K Spotlight. This is where we will talk about a particular fluff point of 40K that really took our fancy. You may have learnt from the joke at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Those who can't serve it all. We're going to talk about servitors.
Yeah.
And we spent the month sort of researching into what they are and what different types of services there are, and really where are they, how they work in 40K in the game.
Yeah.
So just to start right off, the Lexicanum defines servitors as mindless drones of flesh and metal used to carry out simple manual tasks. They are one of few tolerated forms of robotics tolerated in the Imperium, as they are simply surgically enhanced cyborgs and not true artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
So you're obviously those who read all the fluff and will see that the Imperium seem to not trust robots very much.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Maybe the Necrons could have done something wrong there. But so they don't trust true artificial intelligence.
They don't trust anything. Xenos, robots, chaos.
Nothing. Anything different is not trusted. So they don't trust artificial intelligence. So these are they're artificial intelligence, but we're not going to call them
not
that.
Not really.
The creation of servitors are either from a vat,
where
they're
grown.
They are literally test tube servitors, and they're grown for the purpose to serve. When they're born or made or created or released, they are given the task depending on what they can do. Alternatively, you can have prisoners being turned into servitors, choosing a life of servitude instead of a life of imprisonment.
Yeah, well, I think they also just make that sentence. I think people who piss off the Mechanicus basically get sentenced to become a servitor.
That'd be a good task.
It just wipes their brain and they become mindless robots, like we said, you know, and the Mechanicus can laugh at them.
Yeah, so that'd be great. That'd be a great power to have, because you annoy me, servitor.
Yeah.
And then just people come in, drag him away, and then he's delivered to you again the next day with a heavy bolter.
It's also worth stating that Space Marines chapters use servitors, and they tend to use failed... What are they called? Recruits?
Initiates. Novates? Is that what they are?
Not most of them, it has to be said, but I think it's the ones that really like fail the chapter, like fail at a really easy task or cause disgrace because they've stabbed someone in the back. Or
I think it's key not to get the line blurred between servitors and chapter serfs.
Yes.
Because chapter serfs, obviously, they are the ones who equip and help the Space Marines before battle, and the servitors are used primarily as a,
load that.
This big thing here, type people.
Weld that, type this keypad.
So I think
continuously for your life.
I think it's pretty safe to say that the servitors do all the jobs which nobody else wants to really do.
Do you reckon today you'd compare them to like cold callers? Just ring this number again and again and again and again and again.
They're those annoying people that phone you about PPI who follow only a script.
Yeah.
I have nothing else to say.
They're all mindless.
and they're kind of like servitors. So I think that's, pretty good analogy. And you've made me lose my track of thought with that analogy.
Sorry, I'm afraid of that. Well, let's go back in. The Mechanicus tend to outlease, I guess, these servitors for whatever task they're programmed to do to the Adeptus Terror, which we could have done with one or two for uploading the first episode.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I definitely felt mindless afterwards. I felt myself turning into one.
It's the first step for Matt to become my servitor.
try and just crush my hopes. So the Adeptus Terror, like the Administratum, to hold records, to type things up, to carry those heavy things, because we're far too important. They're far too important. This is the Adeptus Terror in the 40K universe,
not the Terror podcast now.
Yeah, we don't have servitors around here.
I don't know.
Pass me that drink.
I think it's important to say that they perform different roles. So servitors aren't just say generic, this is what you do. You have servitors that will be like technical servitors, which will be the ones that aren't used in combat, but they're the ones who maybe will sit at that desk on that ship, making sure that the doors swipe and make the nice noise.
The swish sound.
kind of noise. And that is their task. And it's kind of like a monotask. That is what they're created for. That's why they're there.
Cool.
So they would only do that.
Yeah, do you want to go through the different types then? I've got some notes on them.
Yeah, okay, go on.
So we've got the Technomats. They're the ones that operate in service machines. So they're obviously on Forge Worlds and on Space Marine battle cruisers and anywhere that there is a machine that needs operating, which is a simple push, pull, push, pull, push, pull. The servitors are there.
So the ones in the factories making the shells.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Probably full of servitors.
Full of servitors.
They're the Technomats. There's Holomats, which basically act as holographic recordists. So they basically hold records for the Imperium, maps, layouts for planets, battle plans, meetings, assassination documents, probably just big they're basically big walking hard drives.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which people can pull off information when they need to. So that's quite cool. There's the Lexomax, which are like human computers, basically. They just walk around making loads of calculations. So they're the Math Hammer servers.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they're the Math Hammer people.
And then lastly, you have drones. These drones are basically the mindless slaves who do menial stuff. You think the other servers do menial things. These are the real lowest of the low dudes.
They're the people that open doors.
They're the ones that they go, this Promethean pipe has leaked and could ignite. Go, drone, go. They do all the dangerous stuff that could kill people.
Yeah.
And the Imperium don't really value people very highly, really.
So they have a drone.
We spoke about
Hive
Worlds and how much they just kill off whole sections last episode just to stop cults. You know, they'll kill innocent people. They don't care because there's always more in 40K, apparently. And yeah, and these are the guys that they send in when the job's so bad they don't even want to lose people. And then we get into, I guess, the battlefield guys.
Yeah. So the ones who you will see in-game with a tech priest standing there with heavy bolters attached to them and plasma cannons.
Multi-metals, I think?
Yeah, holding the dangerous weapons that nobody else really wants to hold, but they're made to.
Cause they can also have the servo arm, can't they, for just repair work?
Yeah, so in the game, you can use them to repair rhinos and other vehicles.
It buffs the repair roll, doesn't it?
Yeah, it buffs the repair roll. I suppose in the fluff sense of it, they're the ones who can rip open or rip apart the back of a door to take it off to fix it, or can hold the rhino up while the tech priest is under changing the oil.
Yeah.
So they're the real workhorse.
A servitor Jack.
Yeah, a servitor Jack.
I can just imagine one crawling under and just slowly
lifting up. So they have the battle servitors that would be used there. Quite interestingly, I found, I didn't know this, that you have ecclesiarchy servitors who fight for the Sisters of Battle.
Yeah, I didn't get to read much into them.
So they fight for the Sisters of Battle, and they are adapted by the Mechanicus to fight just for the Sisters and any needs that they might have. So obviously the Sisters of Silence necessarily don't talk, so you can have a servitor to talk for you. Kind of like a talking computer. You type it in and that says what you want. it's quite cool to think about.
Google Translate. They're walking Google Translate.
Also the servitors, the Ecclesiarchy servitors, you can imagine them building the fortifications for the Sisters of Battle.
Because
end of the day, they are just humans. They are Imperial Guard.
Yeah.
So they're not going to be able to construct a bastion like the Imperial Fist could. So they have servitors who do it for them. To build the walls, to build the ships.
Imperial Fist probably still have servitors doing it for them.
Well, okay, but...
but yeah, that's a cool role that they fill. I found out about another group of servitors that I never knew existed.
Called the...
The Praetorian servitors.
Ah, right.
These guys are really cool. So these guys are like heavily armoured dudes who basically hang out on the Mechanicus worlds. They basically guard tech priests and temples, big relics, things like that. Things that the Mechanicum are going to want guarded.
Hmm.
And I don't know, when I was thinking about that, it just made me think of kind of like, you know, you see in movies where statues come alive.
Yes.
Where they're standing still with massive weapons.
Like Harry Potter.
Yeah, I was thinking of Harry Potter as well. They're one of the examples, at least. And, you know, they're just standing there immobile for hundreds of years. And then when the time comes, they activate and swing and cut your head off with a massive axe. I just picture these massive, you know, built-up executioner-style servitors that will kill you at any cost. And that's what they're programmed for. Because after all, a servitor, like we say, is programmed for one task. If their task is to guard, they will kill you at any cost.
Mm.
And they'll do it.
Yeah.
It's not like they're...
It's not like they have a conscience at all,
like
pattern.
Yeah,
so.
They just kill. They'll probably have programmed... You know, I can just imagine it being like trying to think of the kind of a sensor array you might see in another movie where you've got a green blip representing friendly and a red blip representing bad and kill.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just imagine them walking around just going, kill, 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 and you know, swinging their massive swords and shooting their massive cannons. And I don't know, they just seem really cool, and I never even heard of them. So that was a really cool thing to pick up from this segment. I mean, one thing I did want to share before we move on to anything else about servers was I remember reading the Night Lord series by Aaron Dembski Bowden.
Bowden,
however you say that. And they're amazing books. Read them if you haven't. Partly one of the reasons I really like the Night Lords. Well, the reason, really. But in that, they have a servitor who's mentioned in, you know, little more than 10 words. But there's basically a massive space battle going on. And this Space Marine cruiser is basically, you know, damaged beyond repair. It's on fire. Bits are broken off. There's dead people everywhere. The human serfs are dead from exploding things. And as this Space Marine kind of is leaving the bridge, as he's leaving the command room to go and get into an escape pod because it's over, he just glances and sees a servitor still sitting at his desk typing away. And this servitor's like on fire. And the skin part of it, because if you know what a servitor looks like, they're basically kind of... They've got some of their humanity still, at least in image. So, that yeah, they'll have kind of a human face and some of their skin still on them. But they're majorly cybernetic. Kind of Terminator-esque, I guess. Kind of half a face kind of idea. And that's all, you know, blackened and on fire and basically burnt off. And here's this mindless worker just tapping away at a keyboard, trying to keep the aircon on or whatever he's doing. Again, swish. He's doing the swish on the doors. And yeah, he's just sitting there working. He's on fire and just cannot feel anything. And it just really epitomises what a servitor is. Just mindless robot, but looks kind of human.
Mindless expendable robot.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
I think another cool type of servitor is the Samek Redemption Servitor.
I know nothing
about him. Right, okay. Oh. So it is a pattern designed to scavenge Samek. The lexicon describes them as relatively autonomous, with the ability to self-repair and instinct to seek out valuable technology powered mainly through transmuter cores.
They are treasure hunters,
servitors. Their job is to basically scavenge, to go through, find out the nice little bits of technology that the Mechanicum need in order to recycle and to rebuild and to keep going. Okay. They are specifically designed to get through wreckage and rubble. So they will have all of the joints on the servitor are all replaced with heavy duty joints so that they can easily pivot like 360 degrees. They can move their legs above their heads. They can they can do yoga just beyond anyone's else imaginability.
Jump pile.
Exactly. Oh, okay. So if need be, they're quite heavily quite heavily protected as well. Mm. So they have thick armor plating in order to withstand attack. And in order to withstand, I suppose, the elements from where they are. It uses Samek, but I'm sure they have redemption servitors all over the place.
Yeah,
in order to go across, a good example, I suppose, would be when I was reading the Blood Angel omnibus, and they come across a Space Hulk, and they're on the Space Hulk itself, and there's a Adeptus. How do they describe them? The Mechanicum, they're like trained to become a Mechanicum agent.
No idea, man.
Oh, I don't know. But anyway, they're trying to prove themselves, and they're sent to the Space Hulk to basically rip it apart and to harvest parts.
Yeah.
And they have these Blood Angels come into contact with these servitors who start trying to attack the the Blood Angels because they think they're trying to steal the technology. Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
So yeah, so I imagine they're probably the same type of servitor.
There's two types of servitors I've heard of that I never knew
exactly.
of.
Exactly. So always learning really on the Adeptus Terra podcast.
Yeah.
So I suppose the next thing to move on to is how they can be used in game. I know the fluff does say that if a servitor is left on its own without a job or an order, then they do become mind-locked. And they basically stand there and do nothing for as long as their batteries can carry them.
Yeah. Which is a long time.
Which is a long time.
So this Duracell actually, bunnies.
Yes, Duracell bunnies.
Duracell bunny servitor with plasma cannon. There's a modelling idea for you.
So they have this rule in the game where if a servitor moves, I think it's more than 12 inches, isn't it? The rule in the game where they move a certain distance away from a tech priest or an inquisitor in the Inquisition Codex.
Oh, okay.
They will stop and you have to roll a leadership check, and if they fail the leadership check, they become mind-locked.
What's their leadership, do you know?
Like 3, 2. It's ridiculous. If they're with another...
Yeah, yeah.
If they're with a model who can lead them, then nothing really happens and they can continue.
Yeah.
But if they're ever left on their own and not instructed, then, of course, what does a computer do when it's not told to do something? It just stays there and waits for its next command.
Yeah, that's very true, yeah.
So that's what happens in the game.
Okay.
Different uses, I suppose, for them in the game is... I had a set, and I found I never used them in games. The idea of them being able to repair a rhino or razorback is fantastic with a tech priest.
I've seen them in Land Raiders, like, you know, some of the Forge World builds?
Yeah.
It's like the Achilles, which comes with a Thunderfire cannon on top and two Twin Link multi melters on the sponsons. Is, you know, it's a quite a big, beastie tank. And I've seen a tech priest in there with like four servitors just, you know, and they never get out. They're literally just there to repair hull points every turn.
Right. Okay.
Which I've seen as that's a tactic.
I suppose if it's quite a vulnerable tank that is going to take a lot of flak because
it's so powerful.
Because it's so powerful, then you'd have it near them, I suppose.
Yeah.
But in the game, that's primarily what they're used for, is just to repair. Obviously, you can give them heavy bolters and plasma cannons, like we said, but why would you want to give something that is potentially could get stuck and stop moving and not do anything if the tech priest dies? Why would you want to give it something so point heavy?
Yeah.
So in the game, They have their uses. I personally don't run them because I never have a need to. But we could use them for, I know you were saying before, using them in a narrative game as objectives.
Well, I mean, I might as well go into that. So I had the idea, and I've kind of actually just thought about it a little bit more while you were talking, of maybe having three or four on a board, you know, as your objectives, and have them as the, what were they called? The ones that hold all the holo mats, the ones that hold all the records.
Yep.
And they've basically been lost in a crash, or the vehicles got wrecked, or they were transporting them, and they've somehow got, you know, scattered on the battlefield. And basically play them with the relic rules. So the, you know, your enemy's trying to capture them because they hold information, you're trying to get the information back. But every turn, roll a scatter dice and a d6, and that's how many inches they move and in what direction. So they're randomly walking about.
So like the grenade, the mines from the Tyranny Codex.
That's how the old mines used to work.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
Not in the new codex, but yeah, something similar to that. So basically, you know, you're trying to get these moving objectives which could move 6 inches away from you or 4 inches towards you, or, you know, and basically when they get near a board edge, if they go to move off a board edge, you just move them to the board edge. And then next turn, if you roll an arrow that would take them off the board, you re-roll.
Yeah.
Just, you know, simple thought pattern, really. But yeah, that could be really cool. And then when you capture them, you treat them like a relic, so you can't move more than 6, and you're trying to slowly get them off the board to get the information, whether you're trying to retrieve it or capture it. So I thought that was could be a really cool just little way of changing a normal game, and a good excuse to use some servitor models.
That necessarily will sit in your army case.
I mean,
really,
they're
used.
Quite iconic. They haven't changed for a long time, and no. I don't think they need to. I think they're quite good.
Really difficult to paint.
Yeah, they probably are, actually. Quite a lot of detail.
Quite small and fiddly.
Yeah. So, yeah, it gives you an excuse to use those models. I mean, for me, I was thinking about it, and like, I might buy a couple of servitor models off of eBay to save money. And yeah, maybe play that game. That could be fun. One of the other scenarios I thought of is take them out of the Codex entry and use them as a unit, but more like a neutral unit. So two examples: you could have some in a bunker or a building kind of working away at a computer desk or something, and when you move into contact with that bit of terrain, the servitors may turn on you because they've got defense programming. You know, they just see you as you're trying to steal this, like the scavenge guys.
Yeah.
You know, they could attack Imperium because they're just not, you know, they're not smart, they don't know what they're doing, they just attack. So that's one option. Or the Praetorians that I spoke about, you know, the guys who defend. You could have them in front of a shrine or a little kind of grave or something like that. And if you go within 6 inches of it, they will attack you. You know, but you make the shrine the objective.
Yeah, that's cool.
So there's actually, you need to go and capture it, but there's these defense servitors that will attack anything that comes into combat. And you just give it, you know, use the rules from the Codex to give it something similar and maybe give it a power axe or some kind of weapon just to make it a bit scarier. And yeah, I mean, just play around with it, you know, make the game yours. You know, it's kind of one of the things we've been talking about a lot in the last two episodes, this one and last one. Look at the servitors, look at their, you know, the how iconic they are in the game and some of the stuff we've talked about, and come up with your own stuff. We'd love to hear that as well. So let us know if you come up with something that's different to what we've just shared. But yeah.
Awesome.
I don't think I've got anything else to say about servitors, really.
No, it's quite a short topic.
Yeah, I mean, they're really cool. I think they're really iconic. I love the fact that they're used all across the Imperium.
Yeah.
You know, they're in the Mechanicum, they're in the Space Marine chapters, they're working on Terra in the vaults, they're holding, you know, there's actually quite a few different ones. You know, they're working for the Sisters of Battle, which I never knew, and scavenging, and, you know, they're all over the place.
Yeah.
So it'd be cool to see more and, you know, adapt those rules.
So really what we're saying is, never annoy the Mechanicum, because you never know when you're going to have to serve it or...
Yeah.
Right, on that happy note, let's end there, and yeah, we'll go to a break, and then we'll come back with the last segment, which is Life in the Hobby.
Awesome.
As you may have heard on the Adeptus Terra podcast, we have lots of breaks. If you wish to advertise within these breaks, just drop us an email on theadeptusterrapodcast@gmail.com. We'll happily advertise any gaming groups, shops, or any other podcasts. Just drop us an email.
And welcome back. This is the last segment in the episode 2 of the Adeptus Terra podcast.
Yeah, come around quick.
It's the Life in the Hobby, basically, where we will talk about a particular part of the hobby. It could be in painting, building, playing,
converting,
anything. We'll talk about it and you can hear our views. Obviously, we have said in the first episode, if you have any Life in the Hobby sections that you want us to explore or look
at, or any other sections,
just let us know on the Facebook page or drop us an email, and we can ensure we can try and put them in if they're good ideas.
Yeah.
So this episode, we're going to talk about the new, yeah, very, very hesitantly.
New in 2013.
The newish paints, the technical paints.
Yeah.
So do you have a list of all the technical paints?
Yeah, I can go through the names. I'm going to butcher what they're called, but...
Right, okay, whatever. Yeah, if you go through the list then.
Agrellan Earth, Nikilia Oxide, that's fully wrong, Typhus Corrosion, Riser Rust, Nurgle's Rot, and Blood for the Blood God.
Okay, so typical Games Workshop names right there.
Yeah.
And I've got a confession. I've only used one of them.
Mm.
The Typhus Corrosion.
Yeah.
Which is very... It's kind of like
a... new paint for you, actually.
It's a new paint for me. It's only made it on these
tanks. That's cool. You know, like, this section, like you say, is about something in the hobby, and it's new for us and new for you. And,
yeah,
you know, I've used quite a few of them. And the idea is to talk about them and talk about how we might want to use them in the future, how we are using them, and inspire you guys to try them out too.
So my Typhus Corrosion, the paint is kind of like a wash, like a thicker wash with kind of like sandy bits in them. So it's a lot more of a rough wash, and I use it primarily on moving parts, so like oil kind of texture.
Yeah, yeah.
So on my...
It's got like grey-black tinge to it.
Yeah, so on the tanks that I've built for my guard, I've used them on the exhaust vents, on the engines, on the pipes from the barrels to the turret of the Hellhound.
Oh, okay, cool.
So to kind of give it that, this isn't polished metal kind of look, this is actually moving working part. And you'd normally expect it. So you look at, say, a chain of a car or a bike, and it's going to have oil on it to make it move and to work better. So this is kind of what I use this wash for. It was really easy to apply. Definitely less is more to start with, but eventually you're going to just wash all of it.
Layer it up. You'll get comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Like any paint,
you get comfortable with how much you need to use. I thought it gave quite a good texture on specifically engines. Because it can gather in the recesses of the engine. I would definitely use a wash brush to apply it.
Yeah, it's a technical wash.
It's a technical wash. So I started trying to use the standard, the orange tipped one, which didn't hold enough of the sand and the extra bits in the wash, and just made it look like it was a black wash.
Yeah.
Or a grey black wash. So I definitely recommend using a wash brush to apply it. And also maybe mixing it down with the technical, I don't know, is it the Levant?
I can add Layerman. Medium.
Basically the watery looking...
they do a medium, which is another technical paint, which is used to water things down and make them thinner.
Yeah, so I used it with that to give it a more of an even coat.
Okay, even though it's a wash.
Even though it's a wash, I still mixed it in.
That's interesting.
A bit more of a coat, and it actually made it sit in the recesses better when it was watered down more. And it made it naturally flow over the engine like I wanted it to.
Yeah, so you're almost using it as a full wash as well as the recesses.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's different to how I use it, so that's cool.
So especially on when you're using it for the exhaust pipes on a Lehman Russ, they're quite indented. So it sitting in them was quite cool. And then when if the surface is dried and the recesses have got the well of the washing, I used the brush to pick it out. So it kind of left it a little bit running down, and it was quite cool. It was quite a good little effect. It definitely is something to mess around with and really try. But really, that's where my knowledge limits on these paints. So I'll hand you over to Matt to take us forwards.
I've used them a little bit. I got really excited when they came out because a lot of the things I was doing was the long way round. I think these paints cut quite a lot out. Mm. I would say about these paints, a couple of things before we get into all the others and what I use the Typhus for, is that they are definitely higher end technical paints. That's why they are technical paints. They give off a really good effect. They're built for specific things. You can get that high level of painting with these paints quite easily. It makes me feel, as an average painter, I would say, feel like I can achieve things like blood really easily, where before I couldn't.
Yeah.
So Typhus Corrosion, for example, I use it on my buildings because we talked about...
So what one is the Typhus Corrosion, sorry?
This is the one, the grey black wash.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Well, you just spoke about it, yeah.
Wow, okay.
So I haven't used it on any vehicles yet. Right. I haven't painted any vehicles really recently. So I've been using it on all my buildings. Now, I've got a kind of grey design on my buildings, kind of more white, I guess.
Well, it's mimicking Fenris. No, not Fenris, but
it's a snow world. So kind of a white basey kind of building. But there's areas that are obviously with the GW kits that I use have kind of fans and doorways and arches and things that look like they should be metal. And to be honest, in 40K, it's grim dark. Things are in disrepute. So there should be rust and things on and weathering. So I use it on all my buildings and on those sections. So the way I apply it is I tend to use the big wash brush that GW produce. And I just dip it in, make sure I've got a lot of the grit and nastiness, and I'll lay a deep, thick coat of it on. I paint that on top of Rhinox hide, which is one of the browny, bronzy colours that GW produce, because I like that as a nice base coat. And I'll paint it on, and it'll really make it very dark, very oily. I'll run it down a few of the fans and things to make it look like it's dripping oil. And the grit will dry really nicely. After that coat, I don't finish there. That's not the rust section done. I use one of the other paints, which is called Riser Rust.
Okay.
That's a dry brush. It's a technical dry brush. So in the pot, it comes kind of jelly-like. It's quite solid. And you use, you know, any dry brush. I use the GW one.
Yeah.
And, you know, you dip it in and wipe it off with the tissue. The key for dry brushing, I've noticed, is that less is more on the brush.
Definitely.
And if you don't dab it properly with kitchen towel or whatever, you know, toilet roll even, whatever you're using, it can apply too thickly. And suddenly it kind of ruins the effect. And I think Typhus Corrosion and Riser Rust were really built for each other.
Yeah.
Because you paint the blacky oily wash on with the grit. Yeah, so you're getting a 2D effect.
Right, okay, yeah.
2D, 3D effect.
Yeah,
you know what I meant.
Yeah, great minds.
And then you get the Riser Rust and you get it on your brush and you do all your stuff that I've already mentioned. And then you lightly brush it over and suddenly the grit starts getting picked out with the orange.
Right, so the Riser Rust is a dry brush.
It's an orange dry brush.
An orange dry brush, right.
Yeah, an orange dry brush. And it looks really bright orange, and you think, that's not going to look like rust.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very similar to like the Troll Slayer orange that GW do.
Right.
It's like really bright orange. And you think, well, that's going to be well too bright. When you brush it on, especially once I've laid the Rhinox hide underneath.
So Rhinox hide is brown, the blue.
It's a browny...
Brown.
Normal paint that they do, browny bronze kind of colour. And then the wash over the top of that, and then a dry brush of this Riser Rust. And it looks phenomenal.
So I've seen your buildings. What colour's the blue then? Or the...
That's one of the other paints. You're getting confused.
Oh, okay.
We won't get onto that.
Too many layers.
So this is the rust sections, not the brass sections.
Right, oh, okay, sorry. My apologies.
But yeah, so the rust sections are done like that. And then I'll do a light... silver dry brush as well to pick out the really raised areas to show, you know, even more rust. Because if you look at the effects of rust on Google, you'll see kind of bits of the metal, like where it's gone down right to the core metal.
So did you learn how to do this just by trying it, or did you? I know GW produced videos.
So all of these paints come with tutorial videos on YouTube, made by GW themselves. I just searched the name of the paint and then put GW at the end, and I found it straight away, pretty much top of the list. And the guys who are doing it are the guys who paint the models for GW that we see in our codexes, that we see in White Dwarf, that we see in Warhammer Visions. And yeah, so they're clearly amazing painters. And I would, yeah, recommend them. I didn't actually learn this technique from that, though.
Right, okay.
I actually, an old White Dwarf, when White Dwarf was White Dwarf, for those that remember, it wasn't the weekly thing, but it was the monthly magazine, they had a rust technique in it. And it used something like 9 paints. So it used washes, silvers, browns, oranges.
So it overcomplicates absolutely everything.
Yeah, and it looked amazing. So a couple of my first buildings are done that way. And it came out really great. And I can't fault them for their painting guides are brilliant. I would recommend them if you're not sure on how to paint something, check it out. Check out their paint guides. They're online most of the time. Most people have pasted them. And I learned from that. Now, what these paints have done... having the extra grit in the wash cut out 2 of the browns I used to lay down.
Yeah.
The rust dry brush cut out the 2 shades of orange I used to dry brush.
Yeah.
Because it's made for rust. The silver dry brush I was already doing to finish it off. And it's just made it so much quicker, and because of the grit, it's made it much more realistic. It looks like it's a rusted piece of metal.
Right.
I'm really, really pleased with how it's come out. And I think these have produced a higher standard of rust on my buildings than the old way had.
Yeah.
And I use less paints.
Yeah.
Which is a win-win.
So being a blood, being a Space Wolf player, do you find the Blood for the Blood God useful? Because obviously Space Wolves are, especially the Wolven, I can imagine their whole hands drenched in blood from ripping apart enemies.
Yeah, well, sadly, I can't have Wolven anymore.
Well, you still got the models.
Yeah, I have got the models. I still use them as well. They're all my Wolf Guard leaders and stuff. Right. Yeah, I mean, do we want to go on to Blood for the Blood God?
Yeah, let's move on.
Cool. So Blood for the Blood God is the blood effect. I've always wanted to do blood on my models. All my armies I worked out last episode are all very assaulty. You know, Tyranids and Orcs and Space Wolves. They're all kind of get in there and punch stuff. So I wanted kind of a decent blood effect. And I looked online at lots of different things and how to make it, you know, use a gloss... a gloss paint to paint over, you know, your red colours, a couple of shades and all this kind of stuff. But it just didn't seem realistic enough. And then these paints came out. And like I said, the rust and the typhus corrosion really made a realistic rust effect together.
Right.
The blood looks like blood.
Yeah.
Like, it really does. It's so a bit creepy.
Does it stay glossy, like it's wet still?
Yeah.
So they've kind of used the gloss paint that they used to sell, mixed with like a reddy.
Yeah,
is
it
thick red or what?
I would say, yes. Yeah, thicker than a wash, but thinner than a paint.
So you get the running effect.
Yeah. You don't need to water this down at all. I think it would take away from it.
Mm.
Because the way the tutorial video shows is that you paint the edge of the blade that or whatever you're doing it on, so you know where your blood splatter is.
Yeah.
And then you paint away from the striking point.
Yeah.
With a detail brush or a standard brush, depending on how big the weapon is.
Yeah.
I think he uses like an ogre with a massive big blade, and they use it obviously a lot. You paint away with streaks, so it looks like, you know, the impact's come and the blood's gone.
Yeah,
sound effects there for you. No expense spared. If you believe that,
we can add a sound effect in post edit.
Yeah, while editing, I'm doing it, so
we're adding a sound effect in.
But yeah, and it gives a good effect. Now, he recommends that you do thin coats and then just build it up until you're happy.
Right.
First time I used it, I did way too much. Second time I did it, right, I used way too less. And this is where I was saying they're quite high standard of paint.
So do you apply yours to a stippler brush?
No, well, that's the next phase of it.
Right.
So you start with just painting the edge of the blade and then away from the blade with a thinner brush.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of use a standard to get the edge of the blade and the length that you want the blood to be. And then use a thin blade to just kind of take the impact back. Once you've done that, you can take a stipple brush.
Right.
Which is a really short but stiff haired brush, and dip it in, wipe a bit of the excess off, and then literally just run your thumb over it.
See, I remember getting a photo from you showing your thumb as a red raw and blistering from the amount of stippling you were doing using your thumb on blood. So I think you used it too much.
Yeah, I definitely did it too much. I used a brand new GW brush and didn't soften it up first.
Yeah,
so it ripped the skin off. And I said that this paint looks really like blood. It does. I generally did not.
That's because your blood is probably on most of your
No. Before then. But yeah, I cut my finger open using the stipple brush.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't notice because I thought it was just paint on my thumb. Like, it looks that good. It genuinely does. But the stippling effect is, you know, you hold the model whatever angle you want. Again, normally close to the blade and away from the, because of the impact kind of splat. Mm. And you stipple, and then suddenly he's got, you know, the model's got a bit of blood up his arm, a bit of blood on his chest from the impact.
Yeah, so
a bit of blood on the base.
It gives you realism. So I could put it towards maybe when I do my plasma guns and I have the light effect on the armor, on the the marine, on the
source
lighting. Yeah, source lighting. So it's kind of like source blood effect.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's probably not a bad way of talking about it. But yeah, and at first I was doing it on kind of everything. So I got all my blood claws, which is quite a lot, and did pretty much all of them that are painted.
So it's kind of like having more skulls on GW buildings, or more spikes on Chaos Space Marines, or more weird U shapes on Marines.
More blood.
Blood for the blood god.
At first I was doing it on everything.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought about it and thought, actually, I'd rather keep it for my characters, for my specific, I want to get into assault and punch stuff.
So make it special.
Yeah, because it's such a good effect that I think if you cover your army in it, it will make it look cheap and a bit pointless.
So have you, would it not be really cool and really awesome effect to be able to have it on, your wolves, your close combat, you're ripping apart. Having it out of their mouths would be awesome.
Yeah, it would be really cool. I haven't got around to adding that. I mean, they're painted and done, which I'm really chuffed with how they're painted. But I do want to go back and do that.
Yeah.
This is a paint, actually, it's worth adding. That's reminded me, thank you, that you do it at the end.
Yeah.
That the model is finished. You know, his face is all painted, the hair's all done, they've, you know, not got a helmet on. The armor's all done. Every detail on this model is done. It's even based.
I think that's awesome because it means that, say, you take your Fenrisian Wolf, where you're doing it from their mouth, you can put the blood on the snow base. You can, where it's going to land when they're running. You can put it on their foot when it's already fully painted. If you do it like, I've done the head, so now I'm going to paint the blood on, I'm going to finish the head before I do the body, then you're going to lose the effect of having the blood splatter everywhere.
You're going to lose the realism.
The realism.
And I worked that one out after I painted my first guy. Yeah. So I did the model other than the basing, and then did the stippling, and then was like, oh, but now I've got to paint over all the blood that's now on the base from the dripping weapon, because I did like a little pool underneath, and oh, I'm going to have to paint over that. So it's a final thing to finish a model, and you can go back through and add it to models that you painted 4 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really cool. So personally, this is my favourite one. I would love to do, and I've seen it used, and all you guys have probably seen it when you look at the pre-Heresy World Eaters.
Yeah.
So if you look at, like, the Forge World Khan model.
Yes.
With the white armour.
Yeah.
And he's obviously professionally painted. They've used Blood for the Blood God on him and splattered it all over the white armour. And it looks amazing. I would love to do a pre-Heresy World Eater army just so that I can cover it in that blood effect. I won't, because my wallet will slap me in the face, and so will Sam.
And so will your wife.
And so will my wife. But, you know, I just, this effect, I think, is one of the best paints that GW have ever produced.
Mm.
I genuinely do. I think it adds realism. It gives a detail to your special models or the models that go in and punch stuff. And, yeah, use it sparingly, but use it. It's so good.
So have you used any on your NIDs yet?
No, none of my NIDs yet, but I've only got like 5 gene sealers and 1 monster creature painted.
Right, so again, it's going to be waiting to the end.
I think what I'm going to do is finish the army and then go, right, what is the one that really wants this? You know, I'm definitely going to have some of my Dimecarion. You know, it's got the chest.
Well, my Dimecarion.
I'm going to build those drop pods.
Right, okay, fine.
But, you know, the mouthpiece on its chest where it sucks people in.
Yeah.
That's going to be all bloody and gory. Yeah. Because it's eaten something.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do that, definitely.
Yeah.
And, you know, and look at those models that are those that go in with claws blazing, with chainswords blazing, and you know, like, it'd be great for Death Company.
Yeah.
Because although on the black it wouldn't show up that much.
But you'd still get the gloss part.
You'd still get the gloss little specks, and you'd be like, oh, what's that? It draws you into the model, which I really like. So you see that gloss speck on a black armour, and you're like, oh, what's that? And you draw it in, you're like, oh, he's covered in blood.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Blood like, for the blood god.
Genuinely, I can't praise this paint enough. Yeah. I think all of them are quite good, but Blood for the Blood God is my personal favourite.
So I mentioned earlier that the blue that you use on your rust.
Yes.
On your bronze, sorry.
Yeah.
They're the technical paints as well.
That's one of them, yeah. That's the Nikila Oxide.
Cool. Talk me through those.
So this is basically, think of the Statue of Liberty for all our American listeners, all one of you.
No, I actually just checked the stats. There's 13 people listening from America. So
hello, sweet.
Hello, people from America.
Yeah, we haven't offended you yet. Great. hopefully you're getting our sarcastic humour.
Yeah.
But yeah, think of the Statue of Liberty for all those around the world. It's such a big thing that everyone probably has seen it at some point.
When you think of the Statue of Liberty, you see New York.
Yeah.
When you think of New York, you think of the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
One of those two.
That one. but and it's didn't used to be that colour. Didn't used to be the greeny oxide colour. That's because of the salt air. And it's called verdigris. That's the effect.
Mm.
This paint does that effect.
Right, okay. So I assume you've probably used it on your Imperium statue?
Yes. So the Space Marine statue with holding the massive sword.
Yep. And your doors as well. And the buildings.
Yes, so the big double doors with the Aquila on it.
Mm.
So not on the single doors that look kind of like just whatever
bolt doors. Bolt doors. These are
the proper special ones that the Imperium, right. Let's face it, would have made gold or something.
So on your Aquila building, are you going to use it on those?
Yes.
So you've got what me and Matt both have is the eagle head Aquila.
Shrine of the Aquila.
The Shrine of the Aquila on the four walls, like a tower type thing. And that would look really cool. I haven't done that.
Yeah. The whole thing is basically going to be this.
Can you use it too much?
Yes, there's a real danger with this paint. Again, these paints are quite expertly, you need to really master them.
Mm.
And I started on the doors because it's a smaller thing.
Yeah.
The way I do it and the way I think it does it through the tutorial is for the doors, I paint Rhinox Hide again as my base, browny colour. Then I dry brush, heavy dry brush. So a lot more paint on the brush than normal. Gehenna Gold, which is a GW paint. And then out comes the wash. So the way it tells you to do it in the tutorial and the way I've done it is you basically paint it on with a large wash brush because it's a very liquidy paint.
Yeah.
And you pretty much cover the whole thing. Yeah. So it's pretty much blue. And it will puddle and it will,
look awful.
Look awful. But then what you do is straight away afterwards, you get kitchen roll because it's quite absorbent. And I would stress kitchen roll, because I've tried it with toilet roll and it doesn't give the same effect.
It's just not as soft.
you swipe downwards, because that's the direction of rain.
Right, okay.
Which I thought was a really interesting way of talking about it in the YouTube video that GW did.
Right.
And you sweep downwards and just take the surface off. So what's left is it's in all the cracks and crevices, but also a bit on top, because you can't take it all away with the... And it is a light brush. If you do it too heavy, you will take a lot of the paint away.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be careful. Again, it's a technique practice. You have to practice.
Yeah.
And then you leave it to dry. And once it's dried, it genuinely looks like it's starting to oxide. And it looks really, really cool. Now, the first couple of times I did it, I did too much. So it dries and it just looks bluey green.
Right, okay.
So you've got to be careful with how much you're applying.
How easy does it take off? Is it one of those permanently
on
there?
Once it's dry. Once it's dry, you're probably... Well, you could probably take it off. If it's dry but was that day, you could probably put some water on that brush and scrub it a bit.
Other than that, you're talking about repainting.
But otherwise, you're talking about repainting. So it's definitely worth a test model, or like I did, use it on some smaller doors.
Yeah, to get used to the technique.
To get used to the technique. And then I moved on to the statue.
Cool.
The way I did the statue, because it's so big, you can't paint the whole thing. So I did kind of the head and shoulders, and then... wipe downwards, and then I did the chest and wipe downwards, and then I did the cloak and wipe downwards.
So the technical points of contact from the top, and then basically used it to streak down.
Yes,
like you would say if you were putting the Typhus Corrosion on bolts, you put it at the top of the bolt and then let it run down and let it run down. Yeah. So like it would be running down, like water, like rain.
Yeah. So and I'm really happy with how that came out as well. I'll stick some photos up of these kind of models that I'm talking about. Up on the Facebook page. I kind of started but lost a bit of steam, so I'll try and get that going, because I'd love our Facebook page to be a main part of the communication we have with all you guys. So go like it now.
I don't think, is it a like or is it a...
I think you like a page.
Let's have a look.
I know you can follow it and get notifications, but yada, yada, yada. It's not important.
No, it is likes. It is definitely likes.
There you go. And that's all I've really used it for. The one thing I have started trying with it, though, which has kind of come out. I don't know. I've got mixed feelings about it. I think it looks cool, but I think it might need a bit more work. Is I've used it to do power weapons.
Like the glowing effect?
A little bit more than that, and that's why I think I need to go back and try it again, because I think that's what I was after. What I did is I painted like the lightning claws on some Space Wolf Terminators.
Oh, I remember that.
White.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I applied three thin layers of this, so they look really bright green.
Would it not be better to paint them silver, paint them like you normally would, and then do it from the edges and run it down?
Yeah, very possibly. And that's one of the other things I'm going to test. Mm. But, I mean, I've seen people use it for a glowing effect, for light sourcing, for plasma.
That'd be cool.
And it looks quite cool. I've seen it used for, well, they're not in the Codex anymore, but the Ghost Grey Knights.
Yes, yeah.
I've seen them painted
white.
That's
a real shame. They were quite cool.
Yeah, I mean, you could still do a squad of Terminators like that, because they're still in the fluff. They're not gone. They're just not playable as special rules. But you could easily do a squad and just call them that. And yeah, just spray them white and then just apply the wash.
Yeah.
And they're like, done. And that's pretty crazy. And they look really cool for like such a simple... Painting. Again, these paints are really simple. Really, really simple. But take some mastery.
Yeah.
You know, you have to really practice and practice and practice and use test models and try it out and not be afraid to mess it up a little bit.
Test models. Use test models.
Yeah.
Don't say go buy the Horus Heresy Horus model from Forge World and just dump a load of stuff
dump
on.
And go, oh no.
No, don't do that. Yeah. Get a Tac Marine.
But yeah, that's how I use that oxide wash, and that's probably my second favourite. Mm. I really like the effect. And once I got used to how to use it, I think it looks really good.
So what paints are left on your list?
What paints are left? So we did Typhus Corrosion and Rise of Rust. We did Blood God, did the Oxide. Right, so these are the two I haven't used that are left.
Right, okay.
The first one is Agrellan Earth. This is the one you paint on a base and it cracks.
Right, so Simon uses these.
How does he?
Simon uses them for his orcs.
Oh,
so what
I
he
didn't
does
know that.
Is he paints them, puts the I think it's GW, the transferable little shrub things on them to give it fill up the base a little bit more, and then lets it dry. And when it dries, it cracks.
Yeah.
So I've seen them used, interestingly, with painting the base orange first,
okay.
And then painting this on, painting the
this
the,
isn't a clear coat.
No, but when you paint orange and they crack, you're still left with the orange but underneath.
Yeah.
Or what I've seen as well. Is I think Dave Paints used it, where you paint it on and then you paint into the cracks. All right, it's a little bit fiddly.
Oh, wow.
It's a little bit fiddly. Yeah. But if you've got that base of yellow underneath, when it dries, you can get away with it. Or do two layers.
Yeah.
Do a brown and then do an orange on the top.
Yeah, you could do lots of different things, I guess.
Definitely a really good effect. And it adds another layer to what you can do with GW paints and what the effective basing you can have. Simon uses it and they look pretty good. And he has them on his, like, he paints more around, like, the feet of, like, his war boss, because obviously he's in a big mech suit, so it looks a bit more cracked than if he's doing it with
That's really
boys.
Cool. Yeah, that's really smart. I mean, I looked up quite a few reviews on this paint specifically, because I haven't used it.
Yeah.
I haven't even seen it. I didn't know Simon used it. I must pay more attention to his models. Sorry, Simon. But yeah, so, and they were saying that it's really difficult because of the way it layers.
Yeah.
So it's not like you build up lots of thin layers. You've got to apply it quite thick. And it's quite a thick paint itself, from what I've seen. But if you do too much, it doesn't crack properly.
Right.
If you do not enough, it does crack, but they're so small, you can't really even see them.
Right, so it's getting, again,
so
practicing.
Again, it's practicing and getting it right, and probably practice on empty bases.
Do you reckon it'd be worth painting an empty base first and then sticking your model on top?
Yeah, I would probably do that. Because if you mess it up, you can just strip it off the base.
Yeah.
Yeah, even with a Stanley knife or something.
Dipping the feet in a Dettol wash.
Yeah. yeah, I would probably do it that way. And then once you glue the guy down, then maybe add the shrubs and stuff on top to finish it off.
Yeah.
It could be really cool. The only thing is it's not clear, so it's got to be desert. So if you're not doing a desert basing...
No, but I've seen it where they've painted it on and then sprayed it black and had it like cracked, like Death World type black. So it's not necessarily just desert.
Yeah. Then you got to repaint the cracks, or, you know, like, for me, the effect is supposed to be paint on, crack, base done.
But surely the possibilities are limitless,
can do stuff. I mean, you could do...
You could just dry brush it with white
a couple
or
of
grey.
Shades of blue, paint it on, let it crack, and then paint the brown parts white.
Yeah.
And suddenly you've got cracked ice snow.
Yeah, yeah.
I see that, but I don't want to spend all my time doing that.
No, of course, it depends. It depends.
So it comes down to what you want, really. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's a cool paint, but I haven't used it, and it seems quite problematic and difficult. So yeah. It's bottom of my list out of these guys.
Right, okay. And the last one?
And the last one is Nurgle's Rock.
Right, this is the one that... No, I'm thinking of the Oxide. The one that like layers the orange on. No, it's not, is it?
No, that's Rise of Rust.
Right, okay. Ignore me then.
Completely lost. Nurgle's Rot is green, and it's like a really thick wash, again, kind of similar to the blood effect.
Right.
But it's more translucent.
Right.
And the way it works is, if you haven't guessed by the name, it's kind of used for pus and nurgly bits.
Right, okay.
I'm thinking of using it for poisoned on my Tyranids.
Oh,
it's kind of
okay.
A greeny, translucent colour. And basically, you apply it. And if you apply it thinly, it gives a greeny, translucent gloss effect over the top of things. So you could do it on claws or on dangly bits of intestines or whatever you wanted, really, in that way. And it would just look like it's got a green tinge to it, but the main colour underneath would still come through. You can do that way, or you apply it really thickly, and then it dries much more green and looks more like pus or some infected disease wound. Or something like that. The two things I'm planning on using it, I've actually ordered it from GW literally yesterday. And I'm planning on using it with my pipes. I mentioned last episode that I've got a set of two broken pipes that I picked up from the Salute convention.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've got they're cracked open, but nothing coming out of them. So I've used green stuff to make kind of like an ooze kind of pouring out of them. Once that's all sprayed up black and everything, I'm thinking of painting this over the top. Maybe layering a dark green on the bottom and then painting this over the top to make it look like green sludge coming out of the pipes. So, so that could look really good and just give, a realistic effect that this sludge actually looks glossy and sticky and blah.
So, do we know how it works over the top of green stuff?
What do you mean?
So, obviously, green stuff, all right, it dries hard, but it's never going to be like painting plastic.
Yeah, but I mean, once you put a spray layer on, you're just... You know, this is a layer paint. It's not, it's not a base.
Right.
So you would spray the thing black, probably put down, like, I'm going to put down a dark green.
Yeah.
And you paint this over the top to give it a glossy look and maybe a lighter green.
Okay, so it'd be kind of perfect for, I know Mark's got the set of sewers.
Sewers, yeah, it'd be brilliant for the sewer water if you want to do something like that. I mean, one of the pictures in the gallery of the tutorial for this paint is someone's used it and filled a whole GW crater.
Wow.
And it looks like a toxic pit, and it looks amazing. You'd have to pretty much use a whole pot, but it looks amazing.
Wow.
It's really cool. Go check that out, just for the picture,
let
alone the tutorial. But yeah, I'm looking forward to using it. I haven't used it. I know a little about it, and I think, again, with a bit of practice, it could really give off some good effects. I'm going to use it on my nids to do a bit of kind of poisoned-y, toxic-looking claws and stuff.
Yep.
And I'm going to use it to do the pipes, and we'll see from there.
So we'll see how it goes then, basically.
Yeah, I'll report back.
Okay. So what about third-party technical paints? So I know you were looking at the ice one. Is it from...
A couple.
Oh, who was the one that produced that video?
I can't remember their name.
Scenic? No. Woodland Scenic.
Woodland Scenics do lots of different things. They do pigments, washes, all sorts.
Right.
I haven't come across anything they do like crackle paint, like the earth one.
So what about the ice paint that you were going to look at? You were looking at.
There's one which is called Distress Paints.
Right.
And it's basically the lid is the brush, so you unscrew it, you pull it off, and it's got the brush on the middle.
Okay, so like when you get the tester paints from Dulux from the DIY shop.
Yeah. And it's in that kind of pot.
Applicator.
Yeah, that's the good word. And basically, you just pull it out, paint it over the top of your base colour, and leave it. And it'll just dry, and it dries white and cracks.
Okay.
But it's kind of translucently, so the blue comes through and it makes it look icy.
So are you still using those on your board?
I'm going to use Woodland Scenics and use a white pigment to make it look icy.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of blood effects, I haven't really looked into... Any other third
parties? No, I don't know if anyone's
doing it. I've never really
seen
any, yeah. I mean, a lot of these paints I think GW brought out because people are doing them.
Yeah.
So there might be one I haven't heard of. But yeah, the rust effect, the typhus corrosion with the grit in the wash is quite a unique thing. I haven't really seen much elsewhere. The oxide wash, I haven't really seen that anywhere else.
No.
So I was really excited when these came out, because I mean these came out a little after GW did their whole new range.
Yeah.
So the new pots, the new names, which was confusing.
Yeah.
And lots more covers.
Still got the conversion on my iPad.
Yeah, so have I. just to remember, because I keep thinking it's still Chaos Black, where it's Abaddon Black now and
awful.
Mephiston Red, and which was something else red.
No, it used to be Mephiston Red. It's not even Mephiston Red anymore.
Oh, is it? No. Whatever way around.
Exactly. This is how much we know about the paints. But they seem like you said, they seem like paints to add once you're finished, to add that special little effect that stands your models away, apart from those of people you're playing. If they're
I think these paints are for tabletop plus.
Yep.
So we talk about tabletop painted, you know, there's a couple of colours on them, they're base, they look all right.
Yeah, they could.
You can apply.
You can play, and it's easy, and your opponent will be happy with the painted.
Yeah, and it's cool. But you can take that blade that just looks like a silver spike and put that blood effect on, and it completely changes the model.
Yeah.
You can use a Nurgle Plague Bearer in your Demon's Army, add that Nurgle's Rot to the intestine wounds and the stuff that GW put on their models, which is fantastic, and like the pussy, like spots on their back and all that kind of stuff, and have the Nurgle's Rot running down the back, and it will literally look like it's popped.
Yeah.
Like, it's so realistic. That's cool. That's awesome. The Oxide Wash makes a gold statue look like it's been out in the weather, you know, and it's weathering because it's been there for a long time.
Yeah.
These washes and technical paints make your buildings, your models, your everything just the next level.
A little bit greater.
They just make them the next level. And I would seriously advise them for anyone that wants to get into the next level of painting. And yeah, and that's kind of the paints in a nutshell, I guess. Check out the GW tutorials. They talk about them much clearer than I can.
And they show you them as well.
And they show you them, and you get to see the technique being done as they speak. They're brilliant. Something that GW produced very well, I would say. So yeah, go check them out on YouTube and go use them.
Awesome. So that's I think the natural end of the segment. So what we do is we'll go for a break and we'll come back and
final thoughts
and the final thoughts and close the show.
Cool.
Great. Thank you very much. And welcome back. So that was show two.
Yeah,
that was it. Wow. We've done recording and pretty happy with how it's gone so far.
Yeah. I think we're getting better.
Just got to turn it over to server to Matt to edit for me, and then I'm sure I'll get
have to fix it.
Have to fix it afterwards. But I suppose in recap, the servitors was I really learned quite a lot about the servitors
that
I didn't know before we decided to do it last month, and obviously the technical paints. So it's kind of given me really. Infused me to go and try that blood paint out.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good, man.
Just keep going, really. Keep hobbying.
Yeah.
Get some more painted.
Yeah. Next episode, 2 built drop pods coming your way.
Otherwise, I get his Dharmacarion. And I will ruin it in some. I'll turn it into a scenery piece. It will be crashed into the floor.
Our friendship would be on rocky ground, I swear.
Well, you made the deal. All you've got to do is build 2 drop pods.
I'm going to do it. Yeah, there's no way I'm not.
That's all right. That's fine. And they can't be the ones you've already got. Oh, you sold them, didn't you? So you haven't got any drop pods.
I have. I've got 3 built.
All right. So you can't be those ones.
No, that's fine.
I want to see photos of each step.
Yeah,
no. Okay, guys. So that's it. This has been show 2. And I look forward to recording in a month's time and seeing what you guys think on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
See you later.
See you soon.
Welcome to show number 2 of the Adeptus Terror podcast. This episode is called Those Who Can't Serve It All. That's not right. Those Who Can't Do Serve It All.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Hello there, chaps. I'm sorry.
That was awful.
It was not awful.
Anyway, moving on swiftly.
Do-do-do. Cut here, Matt. Cut here.
Oh, yeah, man, I'm doing the editing. Oh, no.
That sucks. And I'm Sam, and along with me today I have my glamorous assistant.
Don't call me your assistant ever again. Crap. Wait, I've lost my notes. I'm there.